Choose your next words carefully, Leonidas. They may be your last.
Madman. You're a madman. Blasphemy. This is madness.
This is Sparta!
Who do we have left? Britney Spears? Cam Kardashian? Paris Hilton? Yeah, that's what we have to look forward to, Kanye West. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. We're global. Shop, S-H-O-P-P-E. Oh, look at you! All right, everybody, I'll be right with you. I'm a good guy. If you attack us, I attack you. Hello, my name is Brian Hammer Jackson, and you're with the Brian Hammer Jackson Show. Boy, it was powerful. This is a no-win situation. I'll give you a call in about an hour and a half. I enjoyed it, baby. I survived it, and I'm at the end of it.
Oppressors of generations who have kept you down with myths of opportunity, and we give it back to you, the people.
Brother, it is time for the mortals to pay.
Release the Kraken!
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. My voice is down, but I am up. Good afternoon, good evening, and good morning. We are global everywhere. It has to be morning somewhere. I know in Australia, I know Germany, even China, that we have a great audience. So I know it's 10 hours maybe. Some are 12 hours difference. Who knows? Anyway, they listen to it on the podcast. I was talking to a couple friends of mine, and Laverne and Melissa. And I know there's a lot going on. By the way, I'm Brian Hammer Jackson. You're listening to Hammer Radio 96.7. It's me. If you'd like to call in the show, my computer is acting up and you can't do it. I have no idea why I'm not getting my links up and everything. But I don't know. I don't even know if I'm broadcasting, tell you the truth. Because my computer is not acting right. All I wanted to say is that it's hard when the pharmaceutical, when somebody lies to you. And especially it's hard to wrap your head around when somebody lies to you who is somebody who's a doctor or a lawyer or somebody who that pertains to your life, you know. And that's what happened. I mean, when we go to the doctor, we don't expect them to lie to us. They're human. And you know what I found out going to the doctor? They don't want to say bad things to you, but they don't want to say good things to you. They want that, I don't know, but let's keep a positive thing. But I was shocked with this headline. Came over. Walgreens, Walmart, and CVS ordered to pay $650 million over opiate sales. This is the first time this ever happened. Why? I don't understand the story. Because you're really telling us that Walgreens, Walmart, and CVS knew about this was wrong, and they still sold it anyway. The U.S. District Judge Dan Poster said in his ruling that the money will be used to fight the opiate crisis in two Ohio countries. I guess they sued and won in Ohio. And I keep thinking, how did we get here? And we have our second story. The GOP is trying everything not to have anything the Democrats do that are successful. I mean, even if it's going to help Americans. And now we get to a point where the Republicans got nothing. It's a dead party. It's a dead party, basically. They're numbnuts. And I know I'm talking to a lot of Republicans, too. But you got to understand. You got to look at it. It's a dead party. So they're resorting to Joe Biden putting more IRS agents, checking, basically it's checking corporate world and making sure they're paying their fair share and everything. But it's the midterms, so the GOP wants to jump on that, and they're twisting it around, and they're saying that the IRS is coming to your house with guns and they're going to shoot you. They're actually saying that. Rick Scott, who's a senator, is saying really weird ass shit. He's telling people don't apply for jobs, so because we're going to get the Republicans are going to take the midterms. So he doesn't want any Republicans apply for jobs until they take over the midterms. We got this. What's going on with the Republicans? They're losing their freaking mind. I'm not lying, because I'm going to read it to you. That's their second story. I don't know how long I'm going to be on, but these are the two stories. We'll get to it really quickly, too. How do we get to this opioid crisis? Do you guys remember this guy? What was his name? Come on. Rush Limbaugh? And I had him up here. Remember Rush Limbaugh? You remember what Rush Limbaugh died of? You remember? You remember he was addicted to Oxycontin? He even admitted that he was addicted to Oxycontin. I'm going to play Rush Limbaugh, but I'm also going to play a couple of patients. But it was really interesting about Rush Limbaugh. It's almost his last broadcast. He was just riding that Oxycontin train. And that's his last broadcast. But I want to get him to admit that he was, I think he did admit that he was addicted. This is how shame it was. I'm pulling that up so you can hear the voice. This is him talking about addiction on FNN. I don't know. That's Fox News, I guess. Here's Rush Limbaugh. Remember his voice?
I actually thank God for my addiction to pain pills because I learned more about myself in rehab than I would have ever learned otherwise. What did you learn from drug rehab?
One of the things that I had always had trouble with in my life was trying to be what other people expected me to be or wanted me to be in my personal life, because I wanted to be liked. And everybody's raised to want to be liked and to want to be loved. Nobody wants to grow up being hated. Now, interestingly, my radio career, I don't care. You know, I figured that out. It was a tough thing, Chris, to learn to take as a measure of success being hated, you know, by 20 or 30% of the country. I mean, that, because nobody's raised for that. But in my personal life, the thing I learned most was that the only way to have real intimacy with people, real solid relationships, is to be who you are. That will attract the kind of people worthy of having intimate relationships with,
and
good without, friendships with.
And without putting you on the couch, are you saying that the addiction came from some sense of personal inadequacy?
Of course. Yeah. It wasn't good enough. I was masking unhappiness elsewhere, not dealing with the real reasons I was unhappy in my personal life. I had never experienced the kind of euphoria that I got from a pain pill. I think the only time that I really, with all the success I've had, the only time I've had that kind of euphoria is when I made the high school football team as a sophomore. I was never prouder of myself. But all my career achievements did not create that for me, because you got to maintain it every day. It's not something you earn, and then it lasts forever. And I don't look back. I don't stop and think about what I've accomplished, because there's always tomorrow. So I don't have time for the euphoria. I don't have time for the, man, am I something? Expectations tomorrow. So the pain pills came along and they masked all these feelings of inadequacy that I had. Now, after 7 weeks of this place in Arizona, I have zero feelings of inadequacy. It's not been replaced by an irresponsible ego. It's just a confidence in who I am.
Well, this is Rush Limbaugh, voice from the past. I think Rush, if I remember, what did he die of? I think it was lung cancer? I will find out what it is. And we're going to, if we want to, I'm not going to do a whole show on Rush Limbaugh because we can, I'm going to do another time where we follow him through drug treatment. We'll do that another time because that's a lot of stuff. Here's Rush Limbaugh on oxycodone diet tips. I don't know what this is about. I don't know if this is real or not. But
hello, good morning.
Good morning. You seem to have stumbled into my area of expertise.
Oxycodone, yes.
Let's get Rush to ask Rush what
he
thinks.
He would know, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, John.
Yes,
Rush Limbaugh. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. You seem to have stumbled into my area of expertise.
Oxycodone, yes.
Look,
what?
A lot of people don't realize about the oxycodone.
Yes.
Not only are they fun,
no.
And you can also lose quite a bit of weight.
No.
Because you can't eat much on them.
No, you don't.
A steady diet, and just a half of the day. You should have everyone should, you should never skip dinner.
No.
But early in the day, oxycodone and 7-Up.
No.
Will keep you going.
Keep you from going. Actually.
Perky.
Yeah.
You gotta back it up. You gotta have something like a nice brandy, a nice Hennessy.
But the story is a doctor in California.
Southern California doctor.
He was handing out oxycodones in exchange for love.
Yes.
If I could have found that guy in 2005,
he was looking for women, Rush.
You don't think I've got women?
No, I bet you do.
Look at this Kellyanne Conway.
Was he white? Was
she
he
sits
black?
On the couch with her knees out. You know how many people around the world in Bangladesh, they don't read English, but they see this on the USA Today website. They think she's got her legs off the knee.
No.
Like Lieutenant Dan?
Like Lieutenant Dan.
Okay.
You know, in the Forrest Gump movie, you've seen that?
Yeah.
He's got a box of chocolates, and he talks about these chocolates during the whole damn movie. It's hard to sit through. They should have given Forrest Gump a couple of oxycodones.
So Rush was the clap doctor from L.A. that was trading out dope for love. White, black, Latino, or other?
It's a strange mix of education and culture. I would say he would almost have to be an African-American.
Okay, John.
I went with black earlier.
Okay. His name is Nagaraja Rota.
That is other.
That's not good.
He is other for sure.
What is he?
He is from El Cajon.
Definitely not
is.
A Presbyterian.
No, I'm going to say he's...
That was Rush Limbaugh on oxycodone, the oxycodone diet. He loved it. How did we get here? Oh, by the way, Rush died from lung cancer. It was very interesting. The reason it's interesting because it says here, Rush Limbaugh, he died from lung cancer after denying smoking's a risk. Why he believed his lie. He lied about smoking is harmful. He believed his lie, which killed him. And we can go with the big lie with Donald Trump and the GOP and whatever. You're smart enough to fall for that bullshit and all the politicians' big lie. But it seemed like the big lie is good because you know why the lie is good? Because it mounts controversy. People get excited. It makes money. Confuses people. Gets them out of their safe place. Gets them excited. A lie, it's good. And if you believe a lie, it is not a lie. If you actually believe it, the person who's telling the lie, if you actually believe it, it's not a lie. It's just information. That's how it works. The heading says this: if liars believe what they are peddling, they can better spread their lies by having more confidence in their presentation. It's true. Trump is an expert at this. Trump will lie in front of you, then change his lie 2 minutes later for another outrageous lie on the same subject, and then change it again 5 minutes later and change it again in front of your face. He's not hiding this shit to see how stupid you are. It's an IQ test, and he laughs at you, and he mocks you because you're really stupid. If somebody's lying to you, you don't know if he's lying, but then they change the subject. You can go the typical, let's go typical. A guy comes home from, I got to take this call. It's a very important call. A guy comes home, and we're going to take a little break. And we'll be right back, I promise you. And we're going to talk more about OxyContin and everything, okay? In fact, we got two people in the studio. If they want to talk, they can talk for 5 minutes. Melissa, and I don't know who 111 is. I'll be right back with more.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
I know y'all miss a pill, right? Chill, but dig, there's been a lot of hate going on, okay? So let me holler at you, first of all. Hey, look at him, dog. Hey. Shout it, you don't know me. When you holler, when you speak, remember you don't know me. Save all the hating and the popping, pimping, you don't know me. Quit telling people you my partner, listen, you don't know me. Don't be a groupie, keep it moving, shout it, you don't know me. Hey, I ain't tripping, but the truth is really you don't know me. Yeah, you know they call me T.I., but you don't know me. You be hating and I see why, cause you don't know me. I think it's time I made a song for people who don't know me. I graduated at the streets, I'm a real OG. I've been trapping so all you rappers acting bad, you gon' have to show me. You gon' make me bring a Chevy to a real slow creep. My partner's hanging out the window, mouth full of gold teeth. When the start, wonder when it's gon' speak. Chop, put the side and create a slow beat. Reaching in the speculation, cause today we gon' see what's the future of a sucker who be hating on me. I ain't worried about the feds' investigation on me. I don't care that they at my shows and they waking on me. I'ma keep on fucking popping long as Tooth is on the beat. Tell police I ain't stopping, I'ma keep it in the street. Contrary to your beliefs, I'm as real as you can be. So keep your thoughts and your feelings shouted, you don't know. You might see me in the street, but shouted, you don't know. When you holler, when you speak, remember, you don't know. Save all the hating and the popping, pimping, you don't know. Quit telling people you my partner, listen, you don't know. Don't be a goofy, keep it moving, shouting, you don't know. Hey, I ain't tripping, but the truth is really, you don't know. Yeah, you know they call me T.I., but you don't know. You be hating and I see why, cause you don't know. Hey, once again, let me remind you, Pippin, you don't know. So don't be walking up and asking what's the deal on the... I don't know if you and why, you could be the police. If I was, you couldn't get up. See me and the PSD falling through at a show. Deep, police holding up the dope, cause they know we dope. I just wanna rap with C. In the fleet, oh, we're playing about a dozen different freaks in a week. I just wanna chill with Petra and his daddy, Freddie G. Ballin' out at any time, and then it's so it's still a G. Wanna ball in the Bahamas, courtesy of KT. Backbone, he got a million, as well as dollar DT. 8K house on the hill, right next to JG. Every week, meet at Palat, dress up right and eat free. Get in, they pay, Lil Greg and B. That's the only shot we got, and getting cat back on the street. You might have seen me in the street, but shouted, you don't know. When you holler, when you speak, remember, you don't know. Save all the hating and the popping, pimping, you don't know. We're telling people you my partner, listen, you don't know. Don't be a goofy, keep it moving, shouting, you don't know. Hey, I ain't tripping, tell the truth, it's really, you don't know. Yeah, you know they call me T.I., but you don't know. You be hating and I see why, cause you don't know. You see a sucker hating on a G, that's some way it's gonna be. What you looking at, now shouting, you don't know. At the club, in the street, so wherever we should meet, a shopper, shopping, you don't know. Hey, I ain't tripping, but the truth is really you don't know. Yeah, you know they
Is anybody else here? Can you let 111 in?
I hope I'm here.
Can you say that again?
I said, I hope I'm here.
Is that
Sarge? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, we're here. He had to take a phone call.
Here. Good for him.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see he's back on the case because I had to search all around as he was going to be on today. It wasn't on in the morning, but lo and behold, I just happened to be browsing, and there he was. So I said,
there he was.
There he was. Yeah. How are you doing?
What's up with you? I'm doing pretty well, thank you.
Okay, very good. I'm glad to hear that, Melissa. Are you getting a suitable supply of opioids?
I was just talking with a friend about this yesterday. I've never taken them in my life. I've never had anything like that.
Be grateful you have.
Yeah,
be grateful you haven't had to.
Well, some people do.
They gave me more. The only time I had opioids when I got wounded, and the medic gave me morphine. I got to admit, it quite pleasant, actually.
Yeah. No, I know people that have, but, I live in the Northeast, and we have a terrible epidemic. Terrible. I've mentioned it many times on the show. It's no joke here. You know what I mean?
I know.
I don't even know what to say, to even expound on it. But what's happened
I really like the way this judge – I'm going to say something about it when Brian returns, if he opens my line up. But I'm going to say this, that, the Walgreens ain't got that much responsibility for any opioid crisis.
I was wondering that.
I think the federal government letting in all these illegal aliens and these drug smugglers are taking advantage of being able to hide in the human tide of illegal aliens coming across the border.
Well, what happened in the Northeast was that people were given these medications pretty easily and readily, right? And then all of a sudden they were cut off, right? The doctors are like, no more. So people either went to the pain clinic or they went to the streets. True story.
Yeah, and that's where the illegal smuggling comes in. And like I said, it's being drastically enabled by illegal immigration because it's much easier to hide smugglers amongst the crowds of illegal aliens. I'm not even saying that they're necessarily involved in trafficking, although undoubtedly some of them are. But the cartels definitely find it much easier to do it. I mean, it's just simple common sense to understand. And when you got hundreds of thousands of people coming across the border illegal every month, it's much easier to hide the smuggling.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got, but they're talking about, in this case, they're talking about Walgreens. I know it's kind of a separate issue in a way. But what is Walgreens supposed to do? They're supposed to look at what apparently is a legal prescription from a licensed practicing physician, and they're supposed to overrule them? They're practicing.
I looked at that and I thought, why are the pharmacies being responsible for this when they were given, as you said, a legal prescription to fill by a patient, right? I'm sort of dumbfounded with that, too.
It's the same logic as holding a lawfully practicing firearms seller responsible for the actions of a third party after they sell the firearm in complete accordance with the laws of the United States and the state in which they operate. It's the same logic or lack of it.
I saw that and I thought, and what are they going to do with the money? What are they going to do with all this
money? Is it going
Ohio.
To individuals? Is it going to the state or the city? Who is it going to?
I think the state.
Well, they're going to waste it. It's California, for Christ's sake.
No, Ohio. Ohio.
I thought it was San Francisco.
No, I thought it was Ohio.
No, it was the ruling was issued by U.S. District Judge Charles Brewer, and that's the San Francisco District Court.
Okay.
So, I suppose, I don't think it has, so since it's in that district, I think that's the 9th district, I don't think it's going to have any relevance for Ohio. It's going to be. It's only going to apply.
Here we go. Listen, CVS, okay. Walgreens, and Walmart must pay $650.5 million in Ohio. That's Ohio. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe I'm looking at another suit. Where is this lawsuit, the one you're talking about with Ohio? Where is that being held?
Federal judge ordered the pharmacy partial responsibility for the deadly drug crisis.
They give a name for this federal judge?
I'm looking. Federal judge. The decision is a companion piece to the November jury verdict held on Polster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so we got two cases against Walgreens then.
Yep, and CVS. Yep.
Oh, okay.
And
those two.
And Walmart.
Boy, the lawyers got busy with this one, didn't they? They said, we're going to go with some deep pockets. Oh, man. Wow.
What are they going to do with this money?
If it goes to state, they're going to waste it. If it goes to state like Ohio or California, they're going to waste it.
Yeah.
Seems to me it ought to go to individuals who are supposedly harmed by this improper or failure to supervise the prescriptions given by a doctor. What the hell?
I don't get it. The money must be paid in installments over 15 years.
Whenever you come in with a prescription to a pharmacy, don't they check with the prescribing doctor? Don't they have these doctors on file?
It's a controlled substance. Absolutely, especially if it's a controlled substance. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so that means that they did contact the doctor and asked, is this a valid prescription that you issued? The doctor says, what the hell is it supposed to do? Overrule the doctor?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm not this at all. Not at all. I think this is more
fair
to hold people who are responsible, and shuffle it off on the people who got deep pockets. That's all it is.
Yeah.
I'm not with this at all.
That's true.
Not a bit.
Yeah. I think Brian is here now. I heard something clicking. I don't know if he's here now. I don't get it.
Let me see if he's...
That's not you.
No, hold on a minute.
Blog Talk. Yeah. Oh, wow. Are we gone now?
I'm trying to see if he's on.
No, we're on.
Here.
No, we're live. We're here. Because if the show ended, we'd be gone.
Oh, are we gone?
No, we're here. Are you there? Oh.
Well, yeah, it seems that the show is being broadcast live, but Brian's not around. Maybe you ought to carry the show for us until he gets back.
That's what I was trying to do. Yeah.
Let's do that then. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah.
Yeah.
This thing definitely, this ruling definitely stinks. I mean, this is...
It does. I don't like it either.
I don't like
because
it one bit.
Because we all know they've got the methadone.
There's a lot of this in society these days. And it fails to put the primary responsibility where it belongs, and that's with the criminals. And then they got all these laws saying you can do this, you can't do that. You know, it's discriminatory. Like, well, say with firearms, for instance, you can't discriminate against someone if they pass a background check. Yeah, but I know there's something suspicious about this guy, but he passed all the checks. I'm not going to sell him the gun. What do you think is going to happen to the firearms dealer?
Yeah.
You're going to get a discrimination lawsuit.
Yeah.
It's the same thing probably the same thing with this prescription, these pharmacists.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
This is just, man.
But how are they responsible for filling a legal prescription?
Well, let's look at what the judge said in the ruling, so maybe we could try to understand their state of mind, because I don't understand it at all.
No.
When they make these things, I want to see exactly what the judge said in his ruling to try to understand their rationale. And here's what Breyer wrote. Walgreens in the case, in the ninth, in the, apparently the Ninth District case, Walgreens has regulatory obligations to take reasonable steps to prevent the drugs from being diverted and harming the public. The evidence at trial established that Walgreens breached these obligations. Now, I don't know how that would be if they were following a prescription and they checked with the issuing doctor and the doctor said the prescription was prescribed. That seems to me is taking reasonable steps. Now, if they didn't do that, they ought to be charged with a crime. I'm sure they did something that is a criminal violation.
Mm-hmm.
You would think, wouldn't you?
Well, all of that, when they write out a prescription for a controlled substance, say it's an opioid, Ritalin, you know, anything like that, it's all put into the computer, and it's all tracked. You get, if people are addicts here and they're considered a pill seeker, they're put into the system. They won't even give it to them. They can't even have it in the hospital. Did you know that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I've always thought about this from my understanding when I was on the job.
That's what they do here. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so if the prosecution or the plaintiff to prove that Walgreens willfully and knowingly dispensed these drugs to fake prescriptions, you know, I could see a case. But where's the proof? I mean, I might even question if a pharmacy even got the authority to just choose to ignore what appears to a reasonable person that's a real prescription from a real doctor. Now, other than them watching for known drug interaction contradictions or giving patients instructions on taking medications that are new to them, I don't see it being Walgreens or any other pharmacy's business. Certainly not to regulate such a thing after the prescription has been validated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I, you know, it seems to me as if today in society, we are looking for third parties to mediate flaws in people. When the regulatory state fails to do its duty and it fulfill its obligations, they want to pass the blame around to other people who ain't responsible.
That's a common thing
of law
now,
saying you're not allowed to do this kind of thing in the first place. I'm just amazed.
People don't
want to
take personal responsibility. How many people don't?
Well, yeah, a lot of people don't. We understand a lot of people don't want to take responsibility. But when the society forces others to be responsible for them, that's the real problem. When
it
people
is.
Like judge make rulings like this, that's even. I think that may be even more of a problem than people who don't take personal responsibility. Because when you don't take personal responsibility, there are usually adverse consequences to you for failing to take responsibility. But apparently we're not willing to let people live with the consequences of their bad decisions.
But they do. In the end, they do.
That's the way it used to be. Nowadays, we got to cushion people from every bad shock of the bad choices they make in life.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we're getting so much of it. Everybody says, well, it's okay. I can screw, like, you know, like you can be a one of these people who invested in bundled derivatives. You know, the you know, when they had these bad loans and you had a bunch of, back in the, when the housing crisis went during the Obama administration, everybody knows it's a bad loan, it's a bad idea, but they came up with, since the Justice Department said, you got to stop discriminating against minorities, right? So they came up, they had to set aside all the sound practices that have been established over decades for determining who is a good risk and a bad risk to give a housing loan to. Got to put that all aside now because Big Mama Janet Reno in the Justice Department says, well, that's discriminatory because a lot of poor minorities can't afford it. So they set aside all these rules. They said, well, look, we got to protect ourselves. We look, the federal government is making us, forcing us to come up with this corrupt scheme, and yes, it was a corrupt scheme called bundled derivatives. We'll put them all together and sell them at a discounted price, and voila, we can kind of mitigate the bad practice that the Justice Department is forcing on us. And guess what? You had a housing, you had a finance crisis. You had a banking collapse in many cases. And who had to bail them out? The federal government. And now, see, there's no consequences for them even setting up the scheme in the first place, which, by the way, was prompted by a corrupt federal government looking to get political votes. So yeah. Everybody all along the line is kind of responsible for setting it up and doing it, and it always happens this way. When you, I hate to say this, because I'm really kind of an agnostic, but when you set aside religious and particularly biblical principles, more often than not, you get a cascading series of bad consequences.
It's true.
But we keep doing it. We're doing it. These Democrats are doing it right now.
Those are humanity laws. It's part of being a human.
Yeah,
and when
you know,
break
I mean,
them,
I think
come back.
Had a pretty good handle, just like William Shakespeare has a pretty good handle on human nature, you know? And human nature responds to certain incentives and disincentives. Knowing what we are, knowing we are flawed creatures, all of us, and I know I am. I know if it wasn't for the possibility of bad consequences of me being alive, I'd be one hell of a lot worse than I am. You know?
Yeah.
I got to constantly check my integrity and my character.
We
and I know
do.
That's for a lot of people. And we got a society today that reinforces bad behavior and reinforces bad behavior for failing to heed the possibility of adverse consequences for bad behavior.
Or they blame it on, oh, they had a bad childhood. A lot of people have. A lot of people have. And that, you know, that's somewhat of an excuse, you know. I agree with you. I you know, absolutely. Yep. Yep. If you're not willing
like
to see it.
After this, all these lawyers, Walgreens, Walmart, CVS, they got deep pockets, okay? That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, it's wealth redistribution in a way.
Yeah.
It's kind of like wealth redistribution.
Well, you know what's interesting? In New England, do you know who owns all of the methadone clinics?
No.
The Koch brothers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, look it up.
Do they have a corporate name for these methadone clinics?
I know for sure. They are the head of what they call Methadone Mile in Boston. You can look that up.
Do they come under the name of a umbrella name of an organization?
Are they
philanthropic?
Names.
Are they philanthropic or are they for hire?
Hold on.
A profit?
Brothers, hold on. I'm going to find this for you. Because it's big money, you know. Okay, Methadone Mile, call it. Mile.
Sometimes people like Koch brothers set that stuff up as like a tax dodge. It'd be a 501(c) charity, you know?
Uh-huh. Yep.
And that way they can get a fake on their taxes and all that.
Yeah, you can. It's, you'll get the hit. You'll see it. It's a joke. But they say, this article says, how the Koch brothers are fighting the opioid crisis. Joe's latest phoenix in the so-called Methadone Mile is the nickname of a cluster of methadone clinics, open-air drug markets. Hold on. Yeah, you can look into it. Look into it. It's amazing.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if they're running for-profit centers or if this is allegedly philanthropic or what is it?
I'm not sure.
Mm.
Not at all. But it's amazing, isn't it? Okay, wait a minute. Here we go. I'm getting there. Okay, and it's then I'm going to skip into the article. And it's one that's caught the attention of some important and controversial financiers. Since 2016, Stroh's Gym received $3 million investment of the conservative Koch brothers as a part of a multi-year plan to help him expand in other cities. So they're backing up other people and replicate the community-based addiction care. The Koch funds are part of the Strand Together program, social entrepreneurs to a systematic poverty problem. It's interesting.
Well, it sounds to me like it's non-profit enterprise. Now, I'm going to hold fire as to how effective it is because I don't know anything about it, and it wouldn't be fair of me to make a value judgment on it.
I'm going to say about maybe half effective, half.
Huh.
Most definitely.
Yeah, that really sounds. Yeah, that really sounds.
The methadone is a joke. I mean, the fentanyl has now become, you know, being in everything from cocaine to heroin to street-bought marijuana. You know, that's pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
Pretty dangerous.
Well, look, all I know is that based upon the suit and what the Walgreens has wanted two options, either close up their pharmacies, which would not be good. It would be harder for people to get drugs. Or come up with a new policy based upon this ruling. And if they do, you could go to that pharmacy and say, look, you got to fill this prescription as my doctor wrote it, or I'm going to sue you for practicing medicine without a license. Or even better, would be for your doctor to write them a letter to the same effect.
Sarge, I wonder if this ties into something I read the other day in the small little community I live in. People were having a hard time. A lot of people posted, you know, have a community page on Facebook, that they weren't getting their prescriptions filled. They didn't say what type they were. It was a big, long post. And somebody was saying a lot of pharmacists were leaving Walgreens.
Huh. You know what? This reminds me, man. Now, Walgreens will fill you an opiate prescription, but what if you tried to get a hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin prescription filled? They wouldn't do that.
No idea. I don't know.
I'm telling you, man, this is completely bass backwards, this whole thing.
No, I don't even use that chain pharmacy. I use the pharmacy at the hospital. Do you know what I mean? The small hospital near here. That's where, if a prescription needs to be filled, that's where we get it. I don't go to Walgreens or any of those places.
Well, I tell you, I think this more likely than not will have the effect of shutting down pharmacies, which is going to make it that much more difficult for many people to get their prescriptions filled. I don't think it's going to help anybody except the people who won on the lawsuit. It helps the lawyers, and that's about it. It ain't going to help the general public.
No.
I'm not trying to carry any water for Walgreens. I just don't see holding them responsible unless they believe the prescription is counterfeit. In which case, they got a right to call a doctor and ask, or check with a doctor and ask. If the doctor verifies the prescription, they ought to be out free and in the clear.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
I mean, we don't steal prescription pads all the time, so you know, or they counterfeit them. So that's understandable. And if the pharmacy has reason to suspect that that might be the case, of course they should check with the doctor.
Or another one.
And
if
a doctor is on file with a pharmacy, has some sort of way to get in contact with them.
Yeah. Another one people try to pull is say their prescriptions were stolen. Even then, it's hard to get the second one filled, from what I understand.
Yeah, I know.
Right? All my pills were stolen.
I know.
All,
getting prescriptions with my granddaughter was hard if she lost her damaged prescription.
Yep.
Yeah, they know.
Yep.
And that was just insulin.
Yeah.
I want to thank you guys. Yeah. Continue talking on the air while I was gone. It was very important. Thank you so much. I had to take that call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hey, welcome, Sergeant. Good morning, Melissa. Beautiful.
Well, I was going to take a back, man. Did you hear anything that we said while you were away?
No, I had to take another call that was important, and I didn't hear anything, but please enlighten me. I can hear now.
Well, essentially, I think Melissa and I would agree that this ruling, we now know that I only knew of one ruling in the Ninth District by Justice, the brother of Stephen Breyer on the Supreme Court, Charles Breyer. He made a ruling holding the Walgreens in San Francisco partially responsible for the opioid epidemic in San Francisco. And then Melissa made me aware of another one in Ohio against CVS and Walgreens. So apparently there's a multiple bunch of these suits going on at the same time. But I think we came to a consensus of agreement that the only obligation a pharmacy should have is to ensure that prescription being written has been in fact prescribed by a medically licensed practicing doctor, and if they have any doubts about the prescription, after checking with that doctor and the doctor confirms the prescription, Walgreens should bear no responsibility whatsoever.
Well, I don't know how the representative goes to Walgreens or these people who represent the pharmaceutical companies and what they say and doctors say. I don't know. You're right, though. I don't know. It says here.
Well, listen to the ruling in Justice Charles Breyer. Here's what District Judge Charles Breyer wrote in his ruling, and I'm quoting from the ruling. Walgreens has regulatory obligations to take reasonable steps to prevent the drugs from being diverted and harming the public. The evidence at trial established that Walgreens breached these obligations. Now, I'm trying to understand what they failed to do. If they didn't do everything that I just said a moment ago, they ought to be up on criminal charges.
Well, it says here that the judge admonished the three companies, saying that they squandered the opportunity to present a meaningful plan to abate the nuance after the proceedings of last spring determined what the countries were owed.
That sounds like legal double speak to justify getting into their pocket.
Patrons. It said here,
Brian, that sounds like legal double speak to justify robbing their purse.
It does, and I'm
reading
it.
They got deep pockets, man. They got the money.
I know. It says Lake County is to receive $360 million over 15 years. Trumbull County is to receive $344 million over the same period. Poster ordered the companies to immediately fork over nearly $87 million to cover the first 2 years of payments, but it was unclear whether they had to pay money. I still don't even understand what the ruling is.
Why doesn't it go to these individuals who are allegedly harmed? Are they saying that the county had to bear a disproportionate amount of expense to care for these people who are harmed by Walgreens and CVS's negligent practices? Is that what they're saying?
I guess so.
Man, this thing stinks. It just stinks. I'm sorry. It just does. Look, this is a separate issue, and I will speak to Melissa about this, too. And then this doesn't have anything to do with this particular issue directly. But the biggest contributor to the opioid crisis in the United States is the federal government by not closing the borders and allowing these drug smugglers to take advantage of the human tide washing over the border and making it much easier to smuggle drugs in with all these people that they can barely process. If at all, the federal government bears the biggest responsibility for much more than Walgreens and CVS does.
Well, that's in Ohio. It hasn't even begun to be the rest of the country. So this is
you think that they're only selling the stuff on the border? Once it gets across the border, they're sending it all over the United States. That's what's killing a lot of these people. These fake pills that are laced with fentanyl and opioids.
It's out of control here. I agree. But now that it's out in the open.
Everything's out of control. And again, we were talking about how it's an attempt to shift responsibility from where it belongs to greater society, and particularly those entities that have deep pockets, and not allowing people to bear the consequences of their bad choices and decisions.
Right. And I want Melissa and Sarge, listen to this. These are people. It's only 6 minutes. These are OxyContin patients then and now, and what they knew then and what they were told now or whatever. Listen to this one. It's only 6 minutes.
Okay.
They're doing the music. It says in 1998, Purdue Pharma distributed a promotional video of 15,000 doctors telling how OxyContin improved patients' lives. 14 years later, here's what happened. They're going to talk soon, but there's some writing in the beginning. Johnny Sullivan took OxyContin to relieve his lower back pain.
I got my life back now. Now I can enjoy every day that I live. I can really enjoy myself. And
that's
before,
1998.
Even a good day was hell. I mean, I couldn't enjoy nothing. But now I can enjoy myself. That's when it says wonderful. I look at the future the same way A young guy, 25, 30-year-old would.
Over time, his family said Johnny became addicted to Oxycontin and other narcotic painkillers.
His biggest problem was he would sleep a lot. And I mean, he was at the point where he was could be sitting in here talking like I'm talking and fall right off to sleep while he was talking. I went to the point where I had to put his socks and shoes on, his clothes on, his shaving, wash his hair, look out of him just like you would look out of a 2 or 3-year-old. He said, I'm in so much pain. I've got to have that pain medicine. He said, I just cannot live without that pain medicine.
People would look at him and literally think, well, he's got to be drunk or he's got to be high on something. They didn't know, you know, he was just on a lot of medicine.
One afternoon in 2008, Johnny fell asleep while driving and tipped his truck over on a country road.
And my phone rang, and it's him, and he says, I can't go.
Let me go back. Hold on. Okay. One afternoon in 2008, Johnny fell asleep while driving and flipped his truck on a country road in North Carolina. He was killed instantly.
And my phone rang, and it was him. And he says, I can't go no farther. And the highway patrolman told me within 5 minutes after I got off the phone with him, he ran off the road. That's when he ran off the road. And they said what happened, eyewitness behind him said that they thought maybe he'd got distracted, which I knew what was wrong with him. He fell asleep from that medicine. I knew what it was.
I think when I first started, I was on 20 milligrams in the morning and 20 in the evening. And it worked. It worked. Since I've been on this new pain medication, I have not missed one day of work. And my boss really appreciates that. Lauren is there every day. So I'm able to be very productive, a productive person again, which is really great. Eventually, it stopped working. And it got increased. I think it was 40 in the morning and 40 in the evening. And then eventually that got increased. This went on for years. Went on for years. I lost my job and I lost my insurance. So it got to the point where I couldn't afford it. And I didn't buy it one time. And that was the beginning of the end for me. Because I could no longer afford it. But the time that I went without it was probably the most unbelievable, excruciating, horrible time of my life. The withdrawals were just unbelievable. I just knew eventually I was, I'd probably kill myself OD taking this medicine. I would never take another Oxycontin. You couldn't get me to take another Oxycontin. Never again.
If Ira Patrice, yourself from
physical therapy hopefully will get me strong to use the drug therapy, but the drug therapy allowed me to do the physical therapy, which in turn lowered my blood pressure and lowered the blood level.
A few years later, Ira was found dead in his Florida apartment at age 62. The cause of death was a high blood pressure and heart disease. A police report said he had been abusing narcotics. His cousin Marilyn said Ira had suffered from mental health problems for years and may have doctors.
Periodically, he and I would go have lunch together.
He said, what? For years and may have doctors shop for pills.
Periodically, he and I would go have lunch together. In the conversation was always the fact that he was taking lots of meds, he had just seen the doctor, or he was just going to see the doctor, or he was about to meet a new doctor. So the word doctor and meds and pain, those words came up over and over and over again. And I would say, where's the pain? I did ask him that. And he'd say, all over, especially my back and my arms and my shoulders, all over.
Mary Dell, a biotech researcher, also took Oxycontin for back pain. She says it still helps her today.
When I started taking oxycodone 2 months ago, it was the first time I had felt normal since my original injury 10 years ago. All that time I had suffered greater or lesser extent of pain, and now I feel absolutely normal. I love what I do, and it would be just heartbreaking for me if I had to give up my career because of my back hurt so much I couldn't work. It makes it possible for me to live a more or less normal life.
Susan was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis at age 25. She says OxyContin allows her to function.
Now, this medication does not turn you into a zombie. It has turned me into an active person again. And all these pictures, I look at myself, I look so heavy and so unhappy. And now I look completely different. I feel different. Life is wonderful again. I have found life again, and it's worth living now. And I'm so grateful. I am afraid that people like me, patients with legitimate chronic pain who can't live without these kinds of drugs, in addition to other things I do to manage the pain, I'm afraid we're the ones that are going to pay for it. We'll be made to suffer if people get overwhelmed in this idea that, oh, we have to do away with these or whatever. It makes me worry for me and how my life is going to be affected. I can't go back to the way it was back in the early 90s.
He took the medicine and hopes that was going to change things, you know, but he had no idea. I knew he would have never stayed on it. He would have never got on it if he knew how he would have ended up, you know, years later.
Yes, I can see the pendulum is swinging the other way now, but I just hope it doesn't swing so far as to hurt people like me that legitimately need this as part of my pain management.
So if you have anybody that's on some kind of pain pills or a cocktail, these are the signs of OxyContin. We could talk about who's suing who. We can talk about that lawsuit, who's responsible. We could talk about that. 60 minutes of the thing, doctors are being held accountable. Are they? Big Pharma's being paying out money. Like it's, you know, $650 million to Big Pharma is like 10 bucks to us. Don't think they're being hurt. I don't know. I think doctors are now being monitored about medication and what they do, and they're responsible for it. I think that's what's happening. Because I do know that, you know, I got some medication, and they ended it after 10 days. And, you know, and then if I needed more, I would have to go get a, you know, they're monitoring these doctors because of that. Anybody join in if you want to, Melissa or Sarge?
Yeah.
So,
hey, look, Brian, you ain't got to tell me about these opiates, man. When I got wounded, my medic got me a morphine right away, and I said to myself, I don't even care if I die. I feel so good. I'm going to go out happy. And when I was in the hospital, they gave me morphine again. It felt good. I know how morphine can be addictive. Believe me. Been there, know it. But, look, I look at it this way, man. There ought to be two entities that ought to be in the crosshairs of this lawsuit thing. The doctors who continue to prescribe opioid pain medications, even after it is obvious to anyone with eyes to see and a brain to reason with, that they are actually extremely addictive and damaging to this individual patient's health. And secondly, the pharmaceutical companies themselves who submitted that these drugs were incapable of causing dependency. That's what they first said, even though the family of chemicals that they are synthetic analogs are some of the most addictive substances on the planet. Believe me, I know. I've had it. I mean, I'm talking about, man, it felt good. I mean, I said, I want some more of this.
Right.
And then the drug makers, the people who make this stuff, who sworn the oath, who submitted false study data, who paid a lot of money, particularly the politicians, and went to all kind of lengths to conceal the truth about their product from the public and the FDA, which itself was negligent in approving a lot of these drugs. Man, it's all kind of blame to go around, and the damn sure shouldn't rest largely with CVS, Walgreens, or Walmart. Please.
You know, I agree, and something to take away from the show, and Melissa has some information on this one, too, and I'm sure a lot of people do. You know, I just don't want to talk about lawsuits and this, because this is not helping nobody. So if you know the signs of some kid right now that's in his room playing a video game, or signs that maybe somebody or your husband is over-medicated, is there any signs that physically that you guys know that maybe we should talk to this doctor, or this guy's being prescribed? I had a doctor. I'm not kidding you. I just met him. I swear to God, this is a really personal thing. And so when I say personal thing, I'm not exaggerating this bullshit. So I had a doctor, and we're talking about, and I don't need it, but we're talking about the blue pill, right? We're talking about erections. You get older and erections and everything. We're talking about that. It was a friend of mine. We're having a good talk. And then one day, it was like, I wasn't, you know, it was an intimacy with my girlfriend. And I wasn't as, at least express it, I'm the hammer, right? I can say it. I wasn't as hard as I should be, you know. I'm sorry?
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry? Yes, thank you. Usually they say that. Thank you for that. And I'm going to put that as a sound effect. Thank you, Melissa. Well, you know what? I wasn't
that
full
back. It's not to make your penis harder. It's to maintain an erection. That's not what that's for.
Oh, it's not supposed to make it harder?
No.
What the hell is that? I can maintain. So anyway, well, now you tell me.
It's maintenance of it, sir. And by the way, Viagra is intended to correct a medical condition, because men are supposed to be able to get an erection. And it's a medicine to correct the fact that they can't.
Right. Okay. Well, I was not at full warrior strength, and I was worried about it. So I asked my doctor. I called him the next day, and I go, and he says, "Did you get in?" Yeah, I did, but I was not full warrior. You know what I'm trying to say, doc? He goes, "Oh," he goes, "just a minute." And that conversation, I swear to God, I get a beep on my phone within 2 seconds. I told him that. I go, "What is this?" And it's like I had a prescription waiting for me at a pharmacy. I go, "What is this?" He goes, "Well, that's an erection, you know, it's like a blue pill, Viagra." But it wasn't Viagra, it was some kind of generic thing. And it goes, "Why am I getting this?" I mean, the guy didn't see me, didn't have the bottom line is he didn't talk to me, it was no consultation, it was not, "How are you feeling, what is your diet?" You know, the talk that you guys just had right here is about maintaining, and it's not, this is what it's for, you know what I'm saying? It was none of that. It was automatically boop, boop, boop. It's waiting for you at the pharmacy right now. That's what it was. And then when I went to the pharmacy, because, you know, I go, "Is this where I go?" You could go to CVS. And CVS has this thing, if when you get a prescription, you can go to the next counter, and it's like a pharmacist that will explain the medication to you. They have this thing. Have you ever been to CVS? I don't know if you guys had one.
It's called a consultation.
Yeah. Oh, so you know. So I get this, and I go to the consultation as a lady. I go, "What is this?" And she goes, "Well, this is like Viagra." I go, "What do you mean like Viagra? It's like a generic form or whatever." She goes, "Well, here's what you do. You know, after 4 hours, blah, blah, blah." I go, "Okay." And I wasn't being funny. I'm saying, "Okay, what happens if I have an erection more than 4 hours? I mean, it's on a Saturday night, right?" And I'm asking a question. She goes, "Well, then your penis explodes." I go, my what? She goes, and she just said it in, as in a conversation. "Your penis will explode. You got to make sure you get there, or they're going to put a needle in there and pop your penis." I go, "Pop my penis? What the fuck are you talking about?" And she goes, "Make sure you take this and this and this, because you can hurt your testes." I go, "I am not taking this. I refuse to take this. Anything that has anything involved that my penis could possibly explode, I am not taking this."
Yeah, I would.
And again, I didn't ask for this. My doctor, I just said, you know, I mean, he just gave it to me right away. I mean, this guy just wrote me anything he wants. You know what I'm saying? "Oh, you need this for high blood pressure? Don't you pick me up? No, go pick it up." Okay. So there's still some doctors
well,
out there.
Well, you know what the problem with that is, Brian, because, you know, failure to be able to get a Russian is could be a symptom of deeper underlying problems. Any doctor just says, oh, you get some, I'm going to prescribe some Viagra for you, rather than looking at your whole medical health and history, is probably guilty of malpractice or malfeasance. I mean, you ought to explore everything else first than giving a corrective for a problem that is something meant to correct something that's normal. It is normal for men to be able to get erections. When they can't get erections, it's indicative of a medical problem. It may be more than just the apparent immediate problem. I mean, that doesn't sound right to me.
It doesn't, Sarge, because I'm thinking at least you want to bring me in for a consultation and what the drug does, what is the side effects of the drug, if you're taking anything else like blood pressure medicine, something, you just don't, bing, go pick it up, son. It's like, whoa, I mean, and I have this problem.
Yeah, I'd
Sarge,
be really suspicious of a doctor like that who wouldn't even ask me any questions about my medical background and history
right. Before
prescribing Viagra or any other of the sexual stimulants. That's, I don't think it's very good medical practice at all.
I never took it. I could get the shit. I will bring it on tomorrow. I will read the shit. You'd be surprised. But when that pharmacist, like Melissa was saying, that consultant was telling me about my first reaction to every medication that my doctor sent me, I said, what are the side effects? I want to be prepared for this. Okay, tell me the side effects of this medication. You know what I mean? I want to know. You know, all of a sudden, am I going to get headaches? Am I going to get constipation? You know, a lot of people don't ask about the side effects. They take the medication. It's like, oh, shit, now there's something else going on with me, and they think it's towards the original problem. And I found out that I was getting headaches, and I'm going, I don't usually get headaches. And then I looked at the medication I was taking, and it says, okay, you will get headaches, and you will get it. And I go, okay, I'm cool. You know what I mean? Do you think enough people know about asking about side effects when they're taking multiple medications?
No, I mean, look, Viagra is a vasodilator. Basically, that's what it came out of research to try to prevent heart attacks and stuff like that. And if you got low blood pressure and you open up your arteries and veins even more, you might just die from low blood pressure. I mean,
right.
You know, you would think that they would want to take everything into account.
I know. You know, I would not. I'm not ashamed, Doc. I mean, Doc. Sorry. Like, I've been talking to doctors. Really? It's Sarge. I'm not ashamed to say, hey, you know what? My warrior needs a little help. You know what I mean? He's been in war. I mean, the guy had been in war since, I don't know, in the 90s. You know what I mean? He's going in the bush. He's been in the bush. You know what I'm trying to say? He's been there.
Oh, believe me, I do.
And so, you know, it's over wear and tear. The guy needed to retire. We even gave him a retirement party on a show about a year ago. And if I need a little help, I need a little help. The problem is that I'm so confused. It's like, it's not like I can't get one, right? I can get one. It goes bam, but I don't go full warrior on it. I'm just like, you know, I don't know if I want to get into the battle. I'm kind of undecided. You know, I'm unsure. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe there should be a new word like, you know, like food insecure. Maybe it should be like erection insecure. You know, you're just a little unsure of what's going on.
So
he did one, but he just doesn't want to go all the way. And you could just say, well, it's the blood in your system. Did you stop smoking? You know, what it is that we all know that the blood flows into the penis and that gives the erection.
Look, I made a sacrifice early on in my life, and that was I decided I was going to be smoking, I was going to be doing alcohol, I was going to be getting regular exercise, because I said when I get older, I want everything to function the way it's supposed to, and because I kind of pretty much stuck to that, it does. Now, again, I know that, you know, people say that might be too much of a sacrifice to give up booze and cigarettes and fast living and getting regular exercise, but I say to you, believe me, buddy, it's worth it, especially when you get older. It's worth it.
But Sarge, it's like I'm having a problem. I cannot live when it's not four. I cannot live with just 10 and a half. You know what I mean? Just halfway. I cannot do it. And I know that women are going, 10 and a half? No. I need full strength. Sorry, Melissa.
Oh, well.
Sorry about the digits.
What if we got on to
this? I like to say, man, like it's good to Carney. Like they say at the Carney, it pays your money and it takes your choice.
I know. Melissa always brings us back. How did we get on this subject?
You got to make a decision, man. It's like it's the same thing with these opiates, you know? I mean, look, Rush Limbaugh got addicted by prescription when he had his back surgery. He didn't go out there looking to get high. He was prescribed the stuff by a surgeon, and he was probably everybody has a genetic predisposition, probably in many cases, to addiction to certain substances, and he probably had that predisposition. So when he got on them, he got hooked.
The thing about he had a deniability. It says here, right here, Sarge, which is even more important. And we're not going to equate it to Donald Trump. This has nothing to do with it. We're talking Rush Limbaugh. So don't even – he says here, if liars believe what they're peddling, they can better spread their lies by having more confidence in their presentation. Now, Rush Limbaugh really actually believed that cigarette smoke did not cause cancer. He actually believed it. It says here – it's just a little thing. It says, what do you say about a person who lies by dismissing the dangers of something only to succumb to it? I'm thinking of radio host Rush Limbaugh, who died this week at 70 from lung cancer after denying that cigarette smoke was a serious health threat. It takes 50 years to kill people. If it does, that's what Rush said. And smoking for...
My grandfather... who lived and worked on a farm in Louisiana, worked almost every day of his life until he was 96 years old. He retired as a railroad brakeman engineer on a train. And then when he got off the train, he'd go to the farm and work. And when he retired from the railroad job, he worked on his farm. He worked on a farm. I mean, putting up fence posts, doing all the hard labor on a farm. Till he was 96, and he did odd jobs for other people. He died at 104, and he smoked almost every day. Every day. Mm. When I went down to visit him downtown, he was smoking every time I looked at him, like a chimney. Now, look, I mean, you might say, well, maybe he would have lived to be 110 if he hadn't smoked. Maybe. But for people to say that smoking causes cancer and kills you, I'm certain it does. In many, many cases, even maybe a majority of cases. But it isn't an absolute. And
George
we certainly
Burns.
All know that.
Right, George Burns, for instance.
I mean, what about homosexual activity? Is it caused because you are more likely to be inflicted with AIDS and you're involved in homosexuality? Yes, you are. Does that mean homosexual activity causes AIDS? No.
How about if you smoke doing homosexual activity?
Well, then you got a double whammy on your ass, ain't you?
That's
the one. All I'm saying is, look, when people make these statements, and when they like to say, oh, got your rush, see, your ass died. Well, look, we got people out there who just dropped, what's this guy, this marathoner, this young man died 40-something. He ran marathons almost every week and died 43 years old, maybe because he ran marathons every week. Huh?
Yeah, well, you're right.
You can manipulate anything, prove it, especially when you get a political enemy in your crosshairs.
That is true.
I don't smoke, man, because I believe it's bad for my health, okay? I don't need any convincing.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to agree with Rush Limbaugh when he says it. I don't take my health advice from Rush Limbaugh. But when people make these categorical statements, especially when they're playing gotcha games, I'm sorry, I ain't buying it. I'm just not.
Well, Rush said this. Tell me if you agree with it. People who have made a living out of spreading outrageous lies are generally not stupid. What they are is expert at self-deception. People who have made a living out of spreading outrageous lies are not generally not stupid. What they are is experts at self-deception. That's Rush Limbaugh.
Okay.
Now, see, these days, with the advent of a nation... a governmental misinformation boards and Twitter, Facebook, blue checkers and all these other clowns. You know what they say? When they say something is misinformation or a big lie, I smell a big fat rat. Because I'm telling you, I don't care what they tell me. I believe there was substantial election fraud that affected the outcome of this election, and I can cite an abundance of evidence to support that. Now, until it gets in the court and it's disproven, I ain't buying their theses.
you know, I told this to Melissa.
I mean, it depends on what it is and how they phrase it. They like to make, again, categorical statements. If we say something is misinformation and a big lie, therefore it is. Trust us. We're the fact checkers. We put out the blue checks. We're on Twitter. We censor for your own good. No way. I ain't buying it.
You know, I said this to Melissa. And I don't know how far this can go. He's a good friend of mine. And I said this to Laverne. And oh, by the way, I got somebody listening on Facebook wanted to comment on my inches. And I have to actually address it.
I don't believe that.
Don't do that. The government's got all kind of ways to track you. Just give them one more.
They're going to track my inches. It says,
that's right.
Brian.
Hunter Biden's already tracked by his inches.
It says Brian.
Because he exposed them out there for them to pick it up. They got another biometric to catch his ass with.
It says, Brian, I'm listening to the show, and I'm hearing that you're worried about you only have 10 and a half inches. I think that's fine with me. And are you available next Saturday? Sign Laverne.
See what I mean? Look what you opened yourself up. Look at what you opened yourself up. It's your fault. You should have known.
I should have known.
But then again, it might be to your down to your benefit, depending upon how fine Laverne is. So I don't know.
Laverne is super fine. She is super fine. But she is very nice.
Well, then it's all good.
She's super fine, but she's not a church girl, but she has really high standards, very too high standards for me. She can't even look down far enough to really even see the top of my head. It's too far down for her to even look. She's really beautiful, but she has very good morals, and that means I'm not in her league. I need somebody who's a crackhead who thinks I'm fine.
Definitely.
All right, listen, here we go.
So we'll go back, which brings us back to the opioid thing again.
You know, doctors are being more responsible. Maybe they're being too careful. I have not had any experience. I asked a doctor. I was in pain about 2 months ago, and I was praying. I called my doc. Hey, I need something. I really do. And I normally don't take any aspirin, but I was in pain. Doc goes, I got what you need. So he goes, go to the pharmacy right now. I was in so much pain, I couldn't go to the pharmacy. I asked my girlfriend to go to the pharmacy. She picked it up. And what she brought back was not pain medicine at all. It was another thing to relieve another problem. But I'm looking for pain medicine. I'm looking for whatever. He didn't prescribe any painkillers at all. So I'm thinking he's a good doc, but, you know, maybe they have learned. I don't know. But maybe we have smartened up about that. But what about the people who actually do need that painkiller, man? I mean, the woman is right. There are certain people that if you have a back problem that you really need, and they're hardworking people, whether they're farmers or whether they do work, you know, bending over a lot. What about those people? I mean, are we forgetting those people who may need a little Oxycontin? Are we worried about that? What do we do?
It's short
That's
term.
All. I'm just,
they need to find out something better, you know?
Well, there is just
In many things, when I was talking to Melissa when you were off the air and I brought this up, this
right.
to me is akin to holding firearms manufacturers' mouths when they completely comply with all of the laws of the state and the federal government to sell a firearm. There are people out there who are unscrupulous who still want to hold them responsible for the actions of a third party. In this case, in this lawsuit, it's similar.
So
in other words, they comply with the state and federal laws, and especially now we get all of these laws against discrimination. Oh, my God, you better not dream of doing anything that even remotely smacks of discrimination, because guess what?
Right.
That's grounds for another suit. So they got them coming and going. You comply with the law? Okay. If you go, you take your own extra non-legal, non-in-the-law steps to ensure compliance, then guess what? You open yourself up to more suits.
Everything is suit happy because these lawyers are making all these damn rules, and too many of them are unscrupulous. And it's a damn shame, Brian, when you live in a country that's supposed to be governed by the rule of law, and you've got unscrupulous lawyers and politicians who allow them to use it to wage lawfare, like they're waging against Donald Trump, like I suspect they may be doing waging against CVS and Walgreens, like they do it against gun dealers and gun manufacturers and a whole host of other entities in the society. It's a shame. It's corruption. It's lack of integrity. It's lack of character. It's refusing to hold people consequences for their individual actions, and it ought to stop.
Hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
What do you think, Melissa?
I agree. We agreed upon that. That's what we were talking about.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think Big Pharma, in many cases, are pieces of horse dung. Like I said just moments ago, about how they lied to the public about their addictive qualities, how they lied about data and research, how they corrupted politicians and others. Yes, I think they're horse dung, but that's got nothing to do with the issue of whether or not they are liable or not. They may or may not be, but to hold an intermediate party like a pharmacy responsible for this is, I think, going a bridge too far.
I agree.
I do agree, too. So now that we all agree, we're going to make transformation. And all I'm saying is, you know, if you're going to get something out of this show, we can talk about it, but there has to be signs. I mean, what is the signs that your doctor is prescribing meds? I think they practice on senior citizens, meaning... You think a doctor looks at a senior citizen and says, you know, how long you have to live and quality of life you're going to live, and maybe I'll just give you this hallucinogenic. I don't know.
Called death panels, Brian, and they're part of Obamacare. So there are people considering such things, yes.
Mm. Okay, we're going to make a transition.
Who gets what depending upon what some bureaucrat or some panel determines is quality of life and who deserves something more than others, even when a person involved has the resources and immediate ability to get what they need to survive?
Yeah. That's a shame, man.
Yeah, it is. And it's coming to a theater near you. The Malthusians, in the World Economic Forum, and they're telling us what's on their minds. We don't need as many people around as we got in the world. Did you hear this guy on the World Economic Forum say that? Did you not see that?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
We don't need all of these people. Soylent Green is made of people.
Mm.
Start with crickets.
But we're going to make a transition, Sarge. This is right up your alley. And, Sarge, you can't deny this. I'll talk to Melissa. This is where Sarge is going to come at us. The Republicans have lost their motherfucking mind. This is my headline. They have lost their mind. Right now what they're saying is the IRS. Apparently Biden has probably passed some kind of law that has something to do with hiring more IRS people. But they're hiring the IRS people as he wants rich to pay more taxes. But the Republicans are going nuts. There's a senator called Rick Scott. Are you familiar with Rick Scott, Sarge?
Yeah, he used to be the governor of Florida.
Exactly.
No.
Well, the Republicans on the other side are saying that they don't want the Democrats to get a win, so they're going after the IRS. They're going after you with the IRS. Even was it Grassley, the oldest guy, Grassley, Senator Grassley? Do you know what I'm talking about, Sarge?
Yeah, Chuck Grassley.
Grassley. He even made a comment that says that the IRS is coming to your house with an AK-47 to blow your brains out. He wants them, so the Republicans want you to know that now with Biden hiring all these IRS agents, and here's the title. The IRS is adding 87,000 new agents, making the IRS larger than the Pentagon, Federal Bureau of Investigation, Customs and Border Protection, and the State Department combined.
Well, that is true,
okay.
Brian. I mean, you can do it's, math, can't you? They literally will have
math,
more people
sorry.
In their employ than all three of those agencies combined.
But the attack on even Rick Scott says this. He's calling on all Americans. He's calling on all Americans. Whatever you do, do not apply for a job. Do not take a job. He's pleading to you. Please do not take a job. Wait till we take over in midterms so we can ratify this IRS thing. But until then, please do not take a job. Is that right, Sarge?
Brian, that's not exactly what he said.
Okay, well, here it is.
He said don't take a job with the IRS because your job is likely to be short-lived, because I think he says, in his opinion, the Republican majority will defund this aspect of the bill, and it won't be money to pay the agents.
Okay, well, here's what he says. The so-called Inflation Reduction Act, that's the bill Biden just signed. It sends nearly $80 billion to the IRS over the next decade, allowing the agency to possibly hire as many as 87,000 employees. Now, when I hear that, Sarge, I'm thinking audit. I'm thinking audit. You know, if you're a business person, you're thinking, oh, shit. You know what I mean? I'm thinking, because they passed me up. And it's like, fuck you. And then it's like, what? 87,000? The chances of you getting audited is going to be pretty damn good. That's what I'm thinking. Right?
I said your odds of being audited ought to go up by a bit more than 100% with this place.
A bit more than 100%. Okay.
But it probably be more than that. I'm going at the minimum.
More than 100%, like 110%. It says here.
I mean, these agents are going to have to find, they're going to have to do something to justify their existence, aren't they?
Well, they are.
Yeah.
But according to Rick Scott again, the hires will be phased in over time and come as the agency braces for projected loss of 50,000 employees over the next 5 or 6 years, largely because of retirements. If the IRS hires all 87,000 new employees at once and no existing employees left at the agency, the IRS would still be about 34,000 employees, smaller than the Pentagon, State Department, FBI, and U.S. Customs. Okay, so anyway, here's what Rick Scott says. He's going after Biden. He says President Joe Biden signed into law a major legislative package that includes many of his policy's priorities. One particular provision is drawing ire from the Republican is the Funding Internal Revenue Service hiring. That's the IRS. The Republicans are losing their frickin' minds. Senator Rick Scott from Florida, discouraged job seekers from applying to the IRS position as an open letter posted on LinkedIn. Scott, who calls himself the jobs governor over two terms in Florida, said the IRS jobs would not survive a Republican takeover of Congress. Scott claimed funding from Congress would make the IRS larger than several other prominent government agencies. So what? So what if the IRS is going to be larger than the FBI and the CIA and everything else? What's the big deal?
Because we need that funding on the Border Patrol to stop this illegal alien invasion. That's why. All the Border Patrol agents are tied up babysitting and changing diapers.
Well, I don't know how this has to do with...
We'd rather have 87,000 more Border Patrol agents or 87,000 more potential auditors going after you with an anal exam.
I see. But Sarge, I mean, we got Rick Scott saying don't apply for any jobs. We got Ted Cruz saying this is an abomination and the IRS is going to come to your homes and arrest you. We have Grassley saying that the IRS is coming to your home with an AK-47 and going to blow your brains out. I mean, this is what they're talking about. I mean, come on, man. I know that probably was a joke.
Brian, you know what my objection to what Senator Scott said is? that the Republicans are all talk and no action, that they won't defund this aspect of this bill. I'm not afraid that they will. I'm afraid that they won't. I think he's overpromising and will probably underdeliver. The Republicans are getting in there and drag their feet and be gutless like they usually are.
I think the IRS has become a lot kinder and gentler than it was many moons ago. I have a small, short story about the IRS and Mike. This was before we got married. He was 19 years old many moons ago. He had gotten a little over a $300 return, and it was taken. It was stolen from the P.O. box that it was, you know, the family, whatever. Somebody in the house stole it, forged his name, blah, blah, blah. They had an agent come to the house, and do you know they wrote him another check? But they haunted him for about 10 years over that. 10 years.
But, Melissa, I don't doubt that the IRS nowadays has found a velvet glove to put over their iron fist. I don't doubt that they have. I believe what you say may be true. On the surface, they may seem kinder and gentler than they were. Because in the past, they used to kind of really specifically focus on people who were genuine tax evaders and abusers, so they didn't have to play around and pussyfoot. Nowadays, you call the IRS, ask for an opinion on what a law means, and you get two or three different answers depending on what IRS agent you talk to. So nowadays, the whole thing, the reason they are more seemingly kinder and gentler is because some of them, at least at the highest levels, have an understanding that one of the biggest things that impelled the separation of the American colonies from Great Britain was abusive taxation policy. You know, I know that we're getting further and further away from the founding and what went into making this country, but the taxing and the idea of taxation without representation, which, yes, we have representatives now, so it ain't exactly the same, but the idea of being abusively taxed is still the same. And that's what's got this whole country started. So they're aware of it, at least dimly, and they try, I think, to mask it with the seeming appearance of compassion, while at the same time, they're ramping up enforcement efforts. I think that's what accounts for it.
Possibly, well, possibly. I don't know.
There's
nothing that will start fearing somebody more than the IRS.
Yes. Well, why would we have such a fear of a government agency? After all, look, as much as I hate to admit it, there is a little thing in the Constitution which is the first thing I would want to repeal from the Constitution. It's the 16th Amendment, which says they can tax income derived from whatever source. It's in the Constitution, so clearly the federal government has an interest in enforcing that aspect of the 16th Amendment. Problem is, the laws they have written are so convoluted and hard to understand that even tax attorneys frequently don't, and many of the agents at the IRS who have the obligation to know don't know either. That's a form of tyranny when you can't even tell what the damn law is. Law is supposed to be reasonably clear. It's a form of tyranny. They need to repeal the 16th Amendment. And you definitely need to defund this aspect of the IRS, at least cut it back to what it was. I don't think we need any more IRS, especially not in the middle of a recession.
But do you think the rhetoric of they're coming to get you, they're coming to get you in your home, the scare tactics are really working? I mean, we're talking intelligent people. It only makes them look silly. Doesn't it, Sarge? This really over
well, right
over
now,
the...
that may be a bit over the top. If you're going to ask me, do I think it is possible? Look what they're doing to the President of the United States, for God's sake. They can do it to him. Who can't they do things like this to? Why is it so inconceivable? I'm not saying it's going to happen. But when we look around us to see what's going on, you know, you got a federal agency deciding that a trigger is a machine gun, and there's been no legislation to support that that belief, and they're doing house-to-house searches for them? Why is it so hard to believe?
I don't think the IRS is actually physically going to come to your house and make you pay up for.
They'll be pointed to agents accompanied by police forces. Yeah, other police. Yeah, they'll be there. The IRS has participated in raids. You know, they do have statutory power of federal agents, just like FBI agents. They carry guns. They can serve search warrants.
For what?
So, yes, they can do it. Whether they do it or not doesn't mean that they can't.
So you're saying to me that Viagra maintains the erection?
Oh, my God.
That's the ostensible purpose of it, yes. It increases blood flow.
No.
Yes. I'm just getting information.
No, Sarge. No.
Okay, Melissa, correct me then.
Sarge, do not talk to him about erection.
Okay. You might have a point there. He might get carried away.
Hey.
Yeah, okay. You're right. You're right. I apologize.
No more.
Yeah, go read a medical journal, Brian.
I will.
Just look up the word vasodilator.
You'll find it. Kind of posing. Vasodilator. Wow.
Yeah, that's what Viagra is. It's a vasodilator.
See, I don't believe in man-made chemicals into a person's body. I really don't. There are millions of people, without the joke, there are millions of people out there who are counting on this little blue pill. And thanks to Biden, it's no longer $20 a pill anymore. You can get it, you know, you can get a good pill for $5, whatever.
$20?
But I don't know, Charles, you know, seriously, I want to have a serious talk about this a little bit. And seriously, Melissa, I'm trying not to offend you or joke. But there are millions of people who are relying on this drug, and I don't know if it's good for the body. It just seems, I know it's supposed to bring, it's a blood thinner. That's basically what it is. It's a blood thinner. Am I correct? It's a blood thinner.
No, that's not exactly right.
No, no.
Blood
it's not?
It actually opens up the arteries and the veins.
It's a vasodilator. Now, what does dilation mean? What does that mean, Brian, dilation?
Well, it dilates it. I'm thinking dilated, it kind of expands.
It opens.
Exactly.
Right.
It arteries in your veins.
It opens. That's what I'm thinking. Am I wrong or am I right?
The side effects are headache, runny nose, that kind of stuff with it.
Right.
So
it's not a blood thinner because, like, blood thinner is a different category than vasodilators, man. It's not the same thing at all.
Vaso, what does that mean? What is vaso? That's vascular, Brian, vascular.
There you go.
But there's another one called, is it Slidenafil? It's a different form of Viagra. They think that was a drug. I'm just trying to go, here's the side effects of it. Here's the side. Nasal congestion, you're absolutely right. Back pain, dizziness. What is it?
Headache.
I don't even.
Edema.
Headache.
Swelling.
Fever. Flushing, visual changes. What the fuck is it blurry or your vision
could
changes?
Could be.
Upper respiratory infection. Oh my God. Urinary tract infection, insomnia, flu-like symptoms, skin rash, diarrhea. Oh my God! For 30 seconds of fun? No way.
That's sexy stuff, huh?
Well,
no,
the one you just mentioned is supposed to be a long-term Viagra. It's like it like gives you the effects over the long term. The blue, I think that one's a yellow pill. The blue pill is the short-term one that gets you ready right away.
What's the other one called? They used to have commercials for it.
Sulodapil, the one that he just referred to as the yellow pill.
Yeah, but what was the name of it? They used to show the couple, and I can't remember the.
You mean a generic name?
No, it was the regular, and there was a couple, and be ready, and I can't.
I think he's talking about a brand name. I can't remember. That was a brand name.
I can't remember that one. Yeah.
I've got it too.
Name for it, which is, you know, like the type of drug that it is. You know, like acetaminophen, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to ibuprofen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's if somebody's out there and they're thinking about it, seriously, here it is, the interaction. Before taking this medication, we're talking Viagra, tell your doctor if you had heart problems, stroke, kidney disease, liver disease, high blood pressure, severe loss of body water, penis conditions such as fibrosis, Peyronie's disease, history of painful prolonged erection. Products that may interact with drugs include certain drugs used to treat you know what?
I don't
know, man.
Get it. You know what? I have an idea. Get a penis pump.
Oh, hell no. Now, here it is right here. It says here, what are the dangers of Viagra? Check this out. Vomiting. You're throwing up. How would you like to be on a chick and then you're going, I feel so nauseous, and you throw up? And then she has the nerve to ask you, did you come? Yeah. Okay. Are you done? Skin rashes. Skin rashes, eye irritation, bloodshot or red eyes, eye pain, seeing flashes of light. Now, I wonder how many people who saw spaceships were actually on Viagra. And they look in the sky going, damn, there's a UFO. I wonder if we have to first ask them if they were on Viagra.
Yeah.
UFO sightings.
Beep, 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 beep.
That was the message to my Laverne. Okay.
He doesn't want to hear this crap.
Thing looking bigger than normal, light sensitivity, watery eyes, a pounding heartbeat. All this for 30 seconds, really? I don't think so. I got
to happen to everybody.
Brian, you got to cut Melissa some slack now. Would you want to hear her talking about her cramps and stuff?
You
up here talking about Jones' problems.
People who are taking this voluntarily, we are talking about there are people out there that are taking this, and they're taking it like it's candy or is a regular thing, like no big deal. And I guarantee you there's probably a third of the people not knowing the side effects of it, and they just think it's normal what's happening to them, or they think they're sick.
You never have a side effect. You got to think about that. The side effects don't affect everybody.
Everything has side effects.
No,
smoking
some people
has side
take
effects.
With no side effects.
I don't know, Carol.
The side effects don't affect, not everybody's the same.
I know. I'm just saying. Okay, well, we're going to get to our main story. Thank you, Melissa, who bared through this. I know this was painful for her. Sorry, and it was painful for her. You're right. You did pick it up. It was very painful for her.
Oh, it was painful.
Here's a story.
Keep your wiener to yourself.
Oh, my God.
Wait a minute, Melissa. There are times when you're supposed to share it with someone else now.
That is true. That is true, but not
I mean,
now.
I mean, you're supposed to be generous and share with a partner willing to accommodate your generosity.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
Okay.
Wow.
Is that we want you to keep it to yourself in appropriate circumstances, Brian.
Never accuse Brian of being a gentleman, ever.
Oh, how dare you, sir, say such things to me, that we are friends.
That's why I don't understand why you don't like Donald Trump.
You know what? There's a part of him that does. And every once in a while, comes out.
You know what? I'm telling you, man. I like his promotion. I like his ego. I like his self-confidence.
He does.
He's happy in his own skin. There's
he's
a lot of
things
secure. To admire
he's
about him.
He's thoroughly male, man. I just love it when a guy is secure in being a man these days. You have no idea.
He's never been shy about talking about the parts that he likes about him, ever.
Right.
Ever.
He has no desire to be, you could tell, a guy like him has no curiosity whatsoever about being trans. At least not anything he ever says or behaves like, saying that publicly. He seems to be absolutely at ease at what he is. He's completely secure about being Donald Trump. Thoroughly male. And I'm sorry, I really like that these days. I'm getting tired of men apologizing for being male and being masculine. I'm sick of it. And Donald Trump embodies a rejection of all of that, and that's one of the reasons I like the guy.
He's macho. He's gorgeous. He's everything.
Yes, he is. I mean, so whether you like his politics or not, that's one aspect. And I will agree, he is brash. He's probably a bit egotistical. Sometimes he could be a bit reckless, maybe even a bit impulsive. I mean, and no human being is perfect. Trump has infinitely more positive attributes than negative ones, but he's got the negatives, and I'm prepared to acknowledge them if they're accurate. But damn it, but like I said, the one thing about him in his character that I really like is he enjoys being a man, and I say God bless him for it.
And you don't apologize.
You're
going to
get your Clinton Bryan over with him.
I'm kidding. No, but he didn't apologize for being a man. I mean, these days, Melissa, these days people want us to apologize for being a man.
Toxic.
A Neanderthal. If you had a boy, Melissa has one. Any woman who has a boy knows that we're Neanderthal. We're animals. It's like, really? Some of the things, we're early men.
I mean, I'm so sick to death of it. All in toxic men at Omaha Beach. Jesus, man. What a horrible thing, huh?
Toxic men. Yeah.
What are you doing? Your pencil? I don't know. Sorry.
Is that Oliver?
Yeah. Where's my pencil?
All those toxic men who entertain us so mightily on the football field on Sunday. Toxic men.
I
love it.
It should be. Okay. Well, you know what? Sorry. It is, I know. Oliver has become a...
Hello, Oliver.
His maleness is coming out. It's coming out, believe me. Yeah, you know. Now he wants to be the expert at everything. It isn't gone. He said, it isn't where it's supposed to be. I said, okay.
He's so cute.
What pen? Which pen? Over here? Okay.
Yeah. All the toxic men who run up and down telephone poles, keeping the telephones in operation, putting the electrical lines up and dying early. One of the reasons men have a little shorter life expectancy than women is they do most of the dangerous jobs to keep civilization running. And in part, that's due to the so-called, quote, toxic, unquote, masculinity.
That is absolutely true. That is absolutely
I'm
working in a coal mine.
That's the one
days,
reason we
died
so much earlier. We take more risks. We do more dangerous things.
That's what you do.
Many of the dangerous things, by the way, are necessary to keep civilization alive.
It was just too
Yeah, especially when there's a storm and you're going out in a storm and you're putting together power lines.
Yeah, or when you want some Alaskan king crab.
Oh, speaking of crab. I got another person on Facebook. They just said to me right here, it goes, Brian, you sound really sexy. If I pull down your pants and you have crab legs, I can date you. Signed, Laverne.
Laverne loves crab leg.
I know
loves
she
it.
Does. She loves those crab legs. She loves them. Mm-hmm. Here we go, last story, crazy story.
How gross.
What is gross?
How gross. All I could think of when you said it was like crab.
So
you know,
look at this
great crab.
Do you have spines on your legs?
I know.
I got everything. I got vertical veins that I'm proud of. I got everything on my legs. Got surgery scars.
Okay. Oh, you got hairy legs and blonde hair that glisten in the sun?
Yeah.
You got
warts. Oh, okay. Yeah. You and Joe got something in common.
Yes. When I was a kid, when I had polio and I had those braces on my legs.
Oh, my God. Stop that. Polio. You know, it's coming back. Don't even laugh.
I know it is.
Don't laugh.
Last story, Changing America. This story came out. You're not going to believe what this story came out. This story came out yesterday. Millions of American adults use hallucinogenic drugs, study finds.
I saw that.
Did you see that?
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah.
Factors such as change in risk perception in a specific type of drugs available and blah, blah, blah. LSD is one of them. Columbia University researchers found the use of hallucinogenics in the past 12 months based on 2019 data increased among adults over the age of 26 while decreasing among Americans age 20 to 17. So 26 and up are using LSD. I guess LSD is making its comeback for hallucinogenic drugs.
You know what they call
it? What is the other one?
You know what they call it? They can buy it in a vape pen with hallucinogenics. You buy, people are vaping it, and they call it frogging. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Frogging.
Data shows that LSD use rose within all age groups between 2002 and 2019, but especially among those aged 17 to 25 are doing LSD again.
Yep.
More than 5.5 million people, U.S. adults, use hallucinogenic drugs.
Hallucinogenic, yeah.
I don't even know what this drug is. It's L-Y-S, lysergic acid?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of it? Oh, that's LSD.
Yeah.
It's LSD. Okay.
Yeah, it's just the name. It's a chemical.
So it's back, everybody. LSD
It's been back.
What's the difference between LSD and...
It's never really gone away, Brian. It's just been kind of underground, that's all.
Damn.
It's not popular.
But I don't... What's the difference between that and ecstasy, though? I still ask the question.
It's a big difference.
Is there?
That's a big difference.
Okay.
Yeah, isn't ecstasy another one is the MDMA? They like that one. They call it that now, right?
Yeah.
That one. I have
in fact, I think MDMA is the generic name for it, I think. Or
yeah,
generic
that's
initial.
That's the old name.
Well, they call it Molly. They call it Molly, too.
Well,
yeah, Molly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they call it Molly. Wow. I guess it's the same drug, different name, and different take on it, right? Wow.
You know they
use
that to try to treat autism, severe autism at one time?
Well, with Molly?
Right.
Yeah, MDA.
One thing I do know, unlike morphine or something like that, it's a synthetic drug. They have to make it completely in a lab by combining chemicals.
Yeah, I knew about this. Up here they call it frogging.
Frogging?
Yeah.
Frogging.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, last story. I got this one.
I ain't up to date because I've been off the job as long as I have been. I ain't up to date with the latest doper stuff. I'm living in a quiet community where it's peaceful. I got foxes and deers running across my driveway, and there's never any sirens or noises or anything. It's as peaceful as it could possibly be. I am so grateful to be disconnected from all that chaos. You know, I don't need no ecstasy.
Yeah,
I would be terrified to take that.
I got peace and quiet. I don't need none of them drugs at all.
But,
I don't need any
of them. They're using hallucinogenics to treat anxiety and depression and ketamine. I was reading that yesterday.
Ketamine, man, make you a hophead and make you hopped up.
Can you imagine that? Yeah.
I mean, they were using a lot of that. They call it cat. They were using a lot of that stuff. Stuff like it, those people in Mogadishu, the Rangers, talking about they were shooting them, and if they didn't hit a vital spot, it was like they didn't feel anything.
Yeah.
They were hopped up on a cat, which is kind of like a natural ketamine.
The ketamine, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give each one of you guys a quiz because I think you should know this subject.
Okay.
Whoever can go first is first. Because it's a 2-minute video, and here it is. Can you tell me the difference between a narcissist, a psychopath, or a sociopath? Can you spot the difference between a narcissist, a psychopath, or a sociopath? How do you spot the difference?
Well, the problem is the overlap, Brian. A lot of them have overlapping attributes with all three of those traits.
True. Very true. Very true. But do they have one? You're absolutely true. Now, here's my take. See, I don't know why a narcissist is a bad thing. I'm going to be honest with you. When I play sports, you have to believe you're the best. In my position, I'm better than the next guy. I'm better than whoever comes up against me. You got to believe in any sport. You have to believe that. You don't believe that you're okay. You never go into competition, and I don't care which competition it is that you decide you want to go into. You never believe, like, hey, I'm okay. I'm not here to win this. I'm just here for the experience. No, you go in there, and any it could be checkers, chess, doesn't have to be any kind of sport, baking, whatever. I'm pretty damn good, and
exist.
I'm going up against you.
I know, but you're missing the point. I believe everybody needs to have there's a difference between having self-confidence and then a true malignant narcissist that attempts, they really want to hurt people.
Right. No, Muhammad Ali was a narcissist, though. But I don't think he was a particularly self-absorbed narcissist. I think that's when you get into the problems. Okay, you're not just a narcissist, but you're incapable of listening to anybody else or understanding anyone else has feelings, too, and you're completely preoccupied with your own to the exclusion of everyone else's.
But both of you, I also believe that it's being a very overused word and title.
Well, this is where they're talking about toxic men or toxic men with attitude. They're comparing them to
toxic
narcissists.
Toxic women, too.
We don't talk about toxic women. I'm glad you brought that up, Mom.
Oh, I think they can be worse than men.
I think women are more prone to narcissism than men are.
Especially how they raise their children, right? I know how to raise my children. Nobody can tell me how to raise my children. I don't need advice from you, you bitch.
That's an ego thing, yeah.
Don't you tell me how to raise my grandchildren.
I mean, do most men, even today, do most men wear makeup? No.
Oh, they do, though. You know, I like to look at ads on Facebook, and I see some of them are men. And I'm like, what? Yesterday, I've been looking at this one for a week, and there are these new things for women when they have their period, and it's underwear that you wear. It's really weird, right? But the picture was of a woman in these, kind of briefs that absorb your period blood, but it was a woman with her breast cut off, and you could see all the scarring.
Oh.
It was really bizarre. It was really bizarre. Nice to Jill. This shit.
Yeah. That's called elective mastectomy.
I was like, but wait, what? Why did I need to see that? What did that represent? Why did I need to see that?
They're trying to normalize deviance. These transgender, they are desperate to normalize it.
Normal.
And pretend it is
it
a normative value for most human beings.
Both of you, it was like fucking Frankenstein there where you could see the purple scars and
yes,
I'm like,
yes.
What the fuck?
Yes. They are telling you,
excuse
look,
my language,
Melissa, they're
but...
telling you you should not feel that way. You should not only just accept it, you should celebrate it. That's the point of it. That's why they did it, Melissa.
But, I mean, it's different if women, you know, I mean, some women have to have mastectomies and they have scars, right? But that was it was the freakish, if this comes on my page again, I will screenshot it and send it to you, Brian.
Okay.
And it was an overweight, flabby slob with tattoos all up and down her arms with the mastectomy scars. Both gone, both breasts gone, with the period underwear on.
when those of us who keep talking about cultural Marxism, when people keep ridiculing us, we talk about cultural Marxism, they are rejecting traditional notions of beauty because they're subversive. That's the whole point, is to be subversive. You know, traditional, Michelangelo's David or Milo's Venus, that's not really the kind of beauty you should aspire to, because we got to change the norms. We got to change the family. We've got to change the very notion of human nature itself. We've got to deny that there are binary sexualities in the world. And part of the acceptance of sexuality is the beauty in both men and women. We're now to deny it. So what they give us is a grotesque simulacrum of beauty. And they tell us this is normal and this is what we should celebrate. It's not an
this
accident.
Is not, it was so distasteful.
That's
it was
the point.
Like, what the?
That's the whole point of it. Once you understand, you see, they want to bring out your distaste for it and then tell you your distaste is an indication of some kind of phobia with you that you need to overcome.
No,
right.
But I don't feel...
That is exactly what they're trying to do to us, Melissa.
They want you to look at this as anger.
They want you to recall about it. Then when you express your feelings of even disgust at what you're seeing, they then jump in right away to tell you there's something wrong with you for having that disgust. You shouldn't
have that feeling.
You should celebrate them. You should say, look, what you're seeing is beautiful. It's the blossoming of a new flowering of liberty and freedom. It's beautiful.
And if they keep pounding into us,
more and more people will accept it.
It's like the Dove campaign that I'm so against, where you have these big, fat women who are diabetic up there saying, I'm beautiful, I got curves, and then look at my bra and look at me. I'm just a, you know, I'm a fat something. I'm a fat son of a bitch, and you're supposed to love me. And it's like, you know, so you make me laugh. It's like some kind of psychological jujitsu. A lot of those women have diabetes, and it's like jujitsu, psychological jujitsu.
They're using our natural feelings that are inbred in all of us, and they bring them to the fore. And then when they come out, they use our own energies against us to peddle their agenda.
Right.
It was really bizarre. I'll get the picture for you. It'll come up again because I've stopped looked at it about three times.
Well, you can send it to me. But we're getting off the subject.
I will.
Psychopaths. Anyone. Anyone want to take a stab at what a psychopath personality would be? Narcissist.
A description of one.
I'm going to put myself as a narcissist. I'm going to put myself as a narcissist, and I don't think it should be a mental illness. I think what I do.
It's not a mental illness. It's a personality disorder.
I don't know if it is a personality. See, when you're brought up with sports, I understand. But when you're brought up with sports, like at 9 and 10, you want to beat the other team. Competition. And you're always trying to be the better team and number one team. I mean, when you're brought up with that and you always want to be better and you're going to be the best and you're competing, when you're brought up with a competing nature since a child into adulthood, even if you have a blog talk show, you want to be number one. You want to be better than this and you want to be better than that. And you have to prove that you are good.
I'll give you an example of someone you're probably familiar with who is a genuine psychopath.
It was Ted Bundy. That's a perfect example of a psychopath.
Okay.
Ted Bundy was outwardly charming, likable,
right,
and even admirable. But
right,
he was very manipulative. He was he seemed to lead a normal life, and he minimized
right
the risk he took to murder and be criminal. A
right
sociopath, on the other hand, does the same kind of crazy, the bizarre, vile, evil, disgusting criminal stuff, but he does it without any regard, recklessly, and don't give a good damn about the consequence of what he's doing. That's the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath.
Well, I agree with you.
Now, Ted Bundy was a classical psychopath.
Huh. Now, who would you put Charles Manson? Where would you put him?
Who? Charles Manson.
Charles Manson.
Oh, Charles Manson was a combination of both. He was definitely
a manipulator.
I'd say he was more of a psychopath than a sociopath, but he had a little bit of sociopathic element too. I'd say he was like 70% psychopath, 30% sociopath.
Hmm. Do you think they could have a combination?
He'd be a mixture of the two.
I think you're right. I think it can overlap, but the personalities.
Oh, yeah. Charles Manson, I think, is a classical case of it. Yeah.
But I disagree. Why would they put narcissist in that group? Because we're going to listen to it. It's only 2 or 3 minutes. And the person is saying narcissist, psychopath, or sociopath, how to spot the difference. Again, I relate to – Donald Trump is a narcissist. In my opinion, he's a narcissist. You know, my steak's nothing better.
I think that's an unfair criticism. I think you're probably going to exaggerate it, but I don't think it's unfair. He definitely loves himself, no doubt about that.
Right, right. But it's not bad.
I think he's put it in generally positive use rather than negative.
Exactly. I mean, he became president of the United States. You know what I'm saying? After all this
and
shit
no
that...
no doubt about his leadership abilities.
Yeah, I mean, all this shit that told him that your background is telling you no, that they're not going to accept you with your faux pas and your indiscretion, you're not going to get a... And he says, fuck that. I'm going to be president
and
of the United
exactly
States.
And that's exactly what I thought about him when he first ran, Brian. I thought he was an utterly an absurd, charlatanist, celebrity, billionaire clown.
Right.
That was my opinion of him. It really
right
was. But then I got to looking. I got to look at these really old tapes of him going back to the 80s when he appeared on talk shows. And he was talking very seriously about issues that he brought to reality when he became president. And he had an in-depth knowledge of it. That's what amazed me. And I began to look at him a bit differently. And the more I learned about him, the more I said, look, I think I've been wrong about many of the things I felt about this guy.
Well, here I want you to listen to this, and hopefully Melissa's back. But I want you to hear this. Oh, hi. Welcome back, Melissa.
Yeah.
It's
thank
only
you
6 minutes, and they're going to tell you the difference between, again, I don't think narcissists would be in there. I relate to being a narcissist. I'm the best there is.
But there's different types of narcissism.
Okay.
There's malignant narcissism.
And it didn't hurt him that much, did it?
Who?
Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, classic
was,
narcissist.
And they could say that about O.J. Simpson. I just watched a really
or
interesting
or even
film.
Howard Stern. I'm a king of all media.
Yeah, well, you know, O.J. to a lesser extent, but he certainly had elements of it. He tried to keep his hidden, though. Muhammad Ali was out in the open and narcissist. No two ways about it.
I guess that I saw this video about him, and I guess that he couldn't even – his friends would throw golf games because he could not lose. He couldn't take it. I'm on the phone, please.
Well, here you go. It's only 5 minutes. You guys tell me. They're going to tell you the difference. I haven't even
heard
this. Here we go. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to mute everybody so you can hear, because I got sirens coming over here. I can see what's going on here. This is on my end. So I'm going to mute everybody so you can – oh, well, I can't mute everybody. You got in here. Okay, here we go.
Here to answer this intense question is Dr. Romney. Help us out here.
Well, it's, you know, again, there's a lot of overlap. But the fact is a lot of people are using these terms interchangeably.
And should they be?
No, they shouldn't. They're different things, okay? One rule of thumb to remember right off the bat. Every psychopath is narcissistic, but not every narcissist is psychopathic. Make sense? There's your key difference. A narcissist is somebody who lacks empathy, is grandiose, is entitled, is constantly seeking validation, is arrogant. It's a disorder of self-esteem, and they have trouble regulating their self-esteem. But when a narcissist does a bad thing, they feel a fair amount of guilt and shame. More shame than guilt, frankly, because they're concerned about how other people view them. Shame is a public emotion. So they don't like being viewed negatively in the public eye or by other people. That's where the shame comes from. But they'll feel a little bad. Like if they cheat on their wife, oh, I probably shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Psychopaths, a different animal. They're all of those things except no guilt, no shame.
Wow.
They don't feel remorse when they do something bad.
Wow.
So they're great serial killers, hired assassins, people who are going to go in and literally sort of gut a business. These are your guys. They're like, I don't care who gets hurt. They'd say that and they'd mean it. Okay, where a narcissist is like, I hope no one gets hurt. Okay? The difference between the psychopath and the sociopath is the one where most people get confused, because the sociopath is a lot like the psychopath. They do bad things and they don't care. Okay? Here's the key difference. A psychopath is born and a sociopath is made.
Mm.
Okay, that's the key. So a psychopath, in fact, we know in the research on psychopathy, which has also been called antisocial personality disorder in our diagnostic manual, these are people who are actually believed to have slightly different autonomic nervous systems. Our autonomic nervous system is actually that part that holds our sympathetic nervous system, which is our fight or flight system. So when our autonomic nervous system for a normal person gets charged up, which it would if we broke a rule, If we did something embarrassing or rude, if we ran through a red light, our heart starts racing.
Mm-hmm.
We sweat. Our pupils get wide. We look around because we're afraid of the consequence. A psychopath doesn't have that same kind of arousal. That's why they're able to lie on lie detector tests. That's how they get away with it. They don't have that same kind of arousal. So where you or I may go on a roller coaster, feel that sense of excitement, we need to get that arousal in a good way. We don't like feeling it when we do something wrong. They don't feel it.
So do they get stressed?
No, not in the same way.
So if they're driving,
because
if I'm driving and I see police sirens coming behind me, I mean, it is a full-on, my gosh, I can't believe I'm going to get pulled over. But a psychopath would see that and go, oh, I'm going to get pulled over.
Well, this could be. They could have a dead body in the trunk, and they wouldn't.
And so they pull over, they get the ticket, and they don't care.
No, they don't care.
And they pay the ticket?
Maybe not. They'll even probably get an attorney to get them off or say, yeah, you know, my understanding of your state laws is you can't really be doing this, and they'll be cool as can be.
And this is a difference in their
They're actually
their makeup.
The nervous systems are wired, and their brains are. There's actually been interesting research done with PET scans where you can see brain function. And what
not, just
shown,
the clarification, not PET like dogs and cats, PET scans.
Positron emission tomography scans of the brain, which show brain functioning, if you will. And what they see is that the section of the brain that serves empathy, that doesn't naturally light up in them. And you can actually teach them to be empathic for a minute, but it doesn't last. A lot of psychopaths who commit violent crimes end up in jail, and the ones who commit more like white-collar crimes, I guess they end up as multi-billionaires because they're willing to do really, really rough stuff in their business and get through like a cartel leader or something like that, call for the killings of other people. Now, their interesting counterpart are the sociopaths. Psychopaths born, they tend to, their belief is that they may very well have, this might be genetic. In fact, psychopaths often have fathers who have lots of antisocial tendencies. Now, how much of it is learned, how much of it is genetic, it's a little bit harder to suss out. But we do see that there is that difference in your true psychopath. They also tend to have really glib, shallow charm. They tend to be really intelligent. That's why they get away with stuff. If they were
so they've learned behavior to assimilate into society.
Oh, yeah.
But it's all a facade.
It's all a facade. They're so charming.
So if they're born this way, would a three-year-old then not get stressed out if it got scared? So that's incredible.
So what we see when we diagnose antisocial personality disorder, which is sort of our diagnostic equivalent to being a psychopath, in order to get that diagnosis, you have to have shown a pattern prior to the age of 15 of things like truancy, violence towards other kids, stealing, skipping school.
And not felt bad about it.
Setting fires. They just do it. They don't care. And that before the age of 15, so it's a long-standing pattern, that's what makes us call them a psychopath or having antisocial personality. Now, this is different than sociopathy.
Yes, okay.
Sociopathy, they look a lot like the psychopath. The difference is they were made. So some examples here. The kid who grows up in a really, 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 really rough neighborhood and learns criminality to get by or learns to be a bully or, like, you know, gets involved with sort of like the wrong kids and uses a lot of muscle because that's survivalism. But it's not necessarily always comfortable for them. They just learn it. It's the person who grows up with a father who teaches them the business and teaches them how to break the rules.
Would they start sweating and have their heart race if they got pulled over?
They might. They may not feel so good about it. They'll be a little bit more uncomfortable with it, but in time they learn it. And it's almost like they get trained in not being as aroused by it. Listen, if you broke enough rules, if you lived under certain conditions of lawlessness long enough, you'd adjust to that new world order,
mm-hmm.
if you will.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the sociopath does.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're the person, someone who said he was actually a great kid until he got to high school, and then it seems like he got in with the wrong kids. That feels more like the sociopath.
Wow.
Okay, that's almost like a training that might happen from within the family, within their community, within even the job they get, some cases even within some form of military training.
Have you had sociopaths and psychopaths as clients?
Not really, no.
No.
They don't tend to come in for therapy. They don't see any benefit to it. The only time you would tend to see psychopaths or sociopaths come into therapy with any consistency is if they were court ordered. So
I thought you were going to say couples therapy.
No, God, no. No, no. It's because they're court-ordered, so the judge will make that a condition of release kind of thing, or they're within prisons and jails and getting some treatment in there.
This is so incredibly fascinating to me. If a psychopath goes to jail, he isn't upset about going to jail?
In some ways it becomes a cost of doing business. You know, but it's also, they're not happy about it. There was psychopaths and to some degree sociopaths don't think about consequences. That's why they pull really penny-ante silly crimes like holding up a liquor store. Basically, I need $150. Here's a liquor store. It's open. Let's go get the money kind of thing. So it's like they act first and think later. So they often don't plan in terms of consequences. That's why they have a tendency to lie, cheat, steal, and they tend to have very inconsistent work histories. Because they're not able to hold a job.
Yeah,
aliases. It's definitely like it's more of a griftery kind of a space.
So we've talked in previous videos about how to cope mm-hmm. while dating a narcissist. Yes. If you find yourself dating a sociopath or a psychopath, is there any coping, or you just got to get out?
You're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
That could be a very dangerous relationship.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. In fact, you know, even with the narcissistic piece, I've done research and work in the area of domestic violence, or what's also called intimate partner violence. Most people who perpetrate domestic violence are either narcissistic or psychopathic,
wow.
And so there's a danger there. In other words, they will dispose of you if you get in their way.
Wow. They would dispose of people. Why not just break up? Why do we have to dispose of people? It's kind of rough. And when they say dispose, I can relate to breaking up. I can relate to leaving. And I'm not a good breaker-upper. My father taught me how to break up, and it's not a good thing because my father says that women are very vindictive and hurtful. The women will come back and they'll key your car. They'll come out your house and throw rocks at you. Women, and it's something about women, when you break up with them, they hit your car. Your car had nothing to do with the breakup, but they tend to hit your car afterwards. So I don't know. I don't know. I think maybe we all have
O'Brien,
these little...
I don't agree with this woman that sociopaths are made. I think the one
think
thing she left out of her equation, okay, it's narcissism, psychopathy, I think she's pretty much on point. But here's what I think she left out in her equation. The infinite amount of variability when you're talking about different human beings exposed to exactly the same environmental conditions. Because people do not react the same to the same learning experiences, the same adverse and positive things that happen to them. We just don't. There's an infinite amount of variability with regard to human nature and the way human beings respond to their environment. I think she completely left that out of her analysis. I don't believe sociopaths are made. I think some people may be born with a greater tendency or proclivity to becoming a sociopath, but I don't think that is entirely determined by their environment, their upbringing, and everything else, as you seem to imply. I don't agree with that at all.
I kind of agree. I don't agree with... I know.
I mean, we're not cookie-cutters. Human beings aren't... We're not stamped out from cookie-cutters. I mean, we all have different tendencies, strengths, weakness innately. And I think that people who have a tendency to sociopathy probably do react more strongly to negative influences in their environment than other people who don't have that same tendency, who are exposed to exactly the same sorts of experiences.
But do you think being a narcissist, you would have to have that as a prerequisite to become a cop? Think about it for a minute. Narcissism has to run rapid during the police force and who you are, and that, you know, you got to take the other guy down and that machismo that you must have to become a cop. Do you think majority, part of being a cop is being a narcissist? What do you think?
Now, I'm going to tell you right now, Brian, that to a degree I agree with you, at least based upon, if I'm taking myself as an example, okay? But here's what change with me. I began to realize that a lot of police officers get in trouble because here's what they say. I am the police. And I say, no, you ain't. You are a police officer. You have been loaned the authority of the state to carry out tasks that the people expect you to perform on their behalf, not on yours, on theirs. And that at
right.
that point, my superego overrode my tendency to narcissism. And I was able to, I believe, successfully fight down that tendency my whole career by remembering that I wasn't the police. I was a police officer temporarily given authority to enforce the law on behalf of the people in the state. And that kept
right.
my ego in check. That kept my narcissism in check.
Hmm. Interesting. But you do agree.
But I didn't consciously think of it, I got to admit, because I got bad, they call it being badge heavy when you first get on
right.
a job, especially. And you
yeah.
want to show everybody that you're the police.
Mm-hmm.
You eventually got to overcome that and say you're not the police. It ain't about you. If
right.
you do think so, you might be an effective police officer as far as locking up bad guys, but it's eventually going to wind up and get you in trouble.
I agree. But I do think you would have to have that. You would have to have that confidence, that little bit of confidence to be a good police officer, even in the military.
I agree with
especially
you, and I had
military.
It. I had it, because already I was very confident in my physical
Hold
ability. On. I was very confident
right.
in my tactical ability. I was very confident in that respect.
Right.
I got scared. I had fear. I felt trepidation. But overall, I was
right.
absolutely confident in my ability to do the job.
Huh. Interesting.
Interesting.
Well, I want to say,
yeah.
On that note, we're going to let Melissa say the last words because we're almost in of the thing because I know she has some comments on mental illness and narcissism and stuff like that. Melissa, you have anything to say?
I mean,
do you think we all should have a certain amount of narcissism? I think a certain amount of narcissism is good. I think it's good.
Yeah, we do. We do.
You know, going to the beauty parlor, get your hair done, or getting your nails done, just the basic
that's
thing of
not
I
what,
look.
No.
No, that's not narcissism?
Mm-hmm.
I look good, I want to feel
no.
good?
No.
No. Okay.
No. No. That's
but
different. Narcissists, really bad ones.
But do you
they're
think,
the worst.
But do you think that a form of I can't even say it anymore. Do you think it's good, though? To be a narcissist?
No, it depends.
Maybe a form of it?
On what type?
Well, a person who is confident. A person
There's
who
a
comes
difference
out,
between
he may
confidence.
Come out crass, he may come out crass. I'm even talking about myself. I can't even talk about myself on this.
Well, confidence
I'm not
doesn't mean that you hurt other people.
Tiger. Huh?
But
it goes back.
He's talking about whether or not you can turn an element of narcissism, whether it's a great
right.
amount or a small amount, to a positive
right.
end. And I would say yes,
I
you
guess
certainly
you could.
Can. That doesn't mean that you will, but you certainly can do it.
And you do it without becoming a toxic man. Yes, from a woman's point of view, can you
There's
can you have a certain
people.
Amount of narcissism without becoming a toxic man? How's that?
Oh, of course you can. Yes, absolutely, you can.
I don't know.
Doesn't mean you will.
Yeah.
You can.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, you can. Certainly. Absolutely.
But just those toxic people in general. It's just that take the sex out of it, right? You know, somebody's gender
well,
or whatever.
Well, I think that's because we see the worst of them manifest themselves. I mean, when someone's narcissism is so bad it becomes blatant, then you are seeing the worst aspects of narcissism. I don't think
yeah.
that applies to most people who have what Brian and I, speaking of a healthy amount of narcissism, and apply
right.
it to furthering their lives and the lives of others. I don't think we're talking about those kind of people. We're talking about the ones where the narcissism manifests itself negatively because it's so overwhelming.
I'll be right out, honey. I'll help you. Yeah.
I think that's what, at least I know that's what I'm referring to.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's what I'm referring to. You nailed it. I want to thank the great Sarge. And you can hear Sarge on other blog
Good
talk shows.
Good show today.
It was a great show. Thank
where
you.
Do you go, Sarge? What shows do you go to?
I go on, Joe Gibson's Restoring America and on TRS Talk Real Solutions, where I really put irons in the fire and I'm up against people who are utterly opposed to everything I believe and stand for. And it can get intense there. But, yeah, I'm on several other platforms. Vince from the Bay on the weekends on Blog Talk at 5
okay.
p.m. Eastern Time, and on NWCR Conservative on Blog Talk also. And
you go to a lot of
shows. Joe Brown and a few other places.
Okay.
Well, go to those shows and get more Sarge. I mean, Sarge is great, man. Sarge is really great. Those are the shows he's on. And I endorse you to listen to Sarge. He got some great views. Even though we are different at times and we have different opinions, it's still good. And don't forget Melissa, the lovely Melissa.
Who doesn't go to any shows.
We signed her on a contract to Brian the Hammer Jackson show. She's exclusive. We're not letting her.
No, but, you know,
it's too hard to break in.
Like I said, Brian, I used to be a boxer, you know, and like the best sparring partners you can have are the ones going to get you a bloody nose and pop your lip every now and then, you know. That's the way you learn to be a better fighter. I mean, you want to get into people who tend to disagree with you, and as long as they do it honestly and, you know, let you get your point in, point counterpart and pass the mic so you can do it, I think that's the best way to reinforce your own ideas or decide maybe you ought to change yours.
Sarge, you should have been here on our earlier shows. There was nothing, but we had – our fights were not just disagreement. They were knife fights, gun fights. They were chairs over people's heads. It was bloody. Yeah. It was – we left bodies.
One day I said, this is Sparta, and we all went at it.
There's limbs that are left in the line.
Once upon a time, I was a liberal progressive Democrat. That just goes to show how far I've come.
Well,
I was even dreaming upon once upon a time becoming a Black Panther.
Really?
I mean, not the one in Wakanda, but the one associated with Huey Newton, Bobby Seale, and Bobby Rush.
Well, you know what? They were great.
No
as
kidding.
Far as I'm concerned, we'll talk about them because Black Panther served the black community very well, as long as you like bean pies. We'll
I was
talk
just
going to
say, make me a bean pie.
Make you a bean
pie. With a whole wheat crust.
They got that from the Nation of Islam, man. They started that
first. That's right. Wow. And part of it, Bobby Seale start Crips? And, I mean, it was some of the gangs started from some of the Black Panthers. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. It was kind of an overlap, actually.
It was, the Crips and
you'll have to, guys, we'll
one?
Talk about what? That. Be an interesting subject.
Blackstone
I don't
Rangers.
Know if I really want to.
Blackstone Rangers in Chicago and the L. Rookins and
why?
The Disciples, Black Gangster Disciples and all that,
When are you afraid to discuss anything? You were on here talking about
I'm
hard
I'm not afraid
Greg.
To.
Okay?
I'm not afraid to, kiddo. I'm not afraid to. I just know I don't know if you guys are – I would be interested in it, and Sarge would talk
I'm
about
interested
it. I mean, it's a great
in hearing it.
Actually,
yeah.
It's a great history. It is a great history.
Oh, yeah, man. I was even thinking about joining Nation of Islam, too.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I read Message to the Black Man by Elijah Muhammad. That was his book. When Malcolm X was still one of Elijah's ministers, I was very impressed by the things he had to say. You know, of course... as you know, Malcolm broke with the Nation because he found out how much corruption there was in the Nation. He couldn't tolerate it, and that's when he broke away from it. But still, I was very much attracted to all that black identity, black power jive.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's like the hippies. A lot of black people went to business and corporate. They got their own business now. I want to say again.
Hotep that used to come in, I think he was Islam.
Hotep was a Nation of Islam, and I'm sure if we went back
Hotep
to 7 a.m.
Hotep is a really cool guy. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Man, like I used to believe that. I used to actually believe Dr. Yacoub grafted white people on the island of Patmos 6,000 years ago and created a corrupt devil race to bedevil mankind. I believed it.
I was the queen of that tribe. You know that? I was.
The queen of what?
I was the queen
Melissa,
of that
the
tribe.
Queen of that tribe.
He's the devil. Wait.
Melissa.
I was it.
Hey.
I was
there. Yeah, but the old evil scientist, Dr. Yacoub, man, created a race of devils to demonize mankind for all time.
Wow.
I can believe that nonsense.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't.
Kind of cool.
It's amazing. All right, everybody. I hope to see you.
I'll talk to you later.
I hope to see you guys tomorrow. I hope to see it. All right, guys. Have a good one.
When are you
going to
be on tomorrow? I'm going to try
in the morning again. I always try at 7 a.m.
Before my phone wouldn't hang up. If you have Facebook, go and add have at his page, and you'll know when he goes live.
All right. Okay.
Well, again, I'm going to try for 10 a.m. If I'm not on at 10 a.m. your time,
bullshit.
I will probably be
bullshit.
On...
Bullshit. Bullshit.
Between
bullshit.
10 a.m. to 12, I would say your time.
But did you
give
hear
it
what
that...
I said? If you go to his Facebook, you'll get the notification that he's going to have a show.
I didn't know Sarge was on Facebook.
I said if you are.
Yes, I am. I'm going to do that. I am on Facebook, and I never go to Facebook, but I'm going to do it this time.
Brian yeah, Hammer
that's
Jackson.
How you, that's how
you'll
we
see it,
know.
See...
That's how. All right.
Well, I try. I think go to blogtalk.com and hit Brian Hammer Jackson. You guys don't get notified. I mean, especially if you're on Facebook.
I don't check my. I don't use that email anymore.
Oh, I see. I see.
So I am a follower,
but
I don't.
For
use
Sarge,
that.
I'm going to try this. You're right, sweetheart. And Sarge, I'm going to try this between 7 and 7:30. It's Friday. That's tomorrow. That's 10 to 10:30 your time. I will be on. I'm going to make a point from 10 a.m.
Yeah, but you have
to
the kids or anything?
Huh?
You still have the kids with you? You still have the kids with you?
No. No, okay. Jessica's fine. I don't have the little ones. I don't have the little ones.
Okay.
From all 7, right. I'm going to try to go 10 o'clock a.m. your time, but if I'm late, it will be 10:30 a.m. your time, Sarge.
Aye, aye.
Okie dokie.
You got it. You guys, please be
okay,
safe,
bye.
And thank you for coming on. Love you guys. Okay, see you later. Bye.
Till then.
Bye.
Okay, till then.
Trying to hang this up. Damn thing.